You might be thinking that me giving you advice on pitching a show is insincere or not applicable because of that. But listen, there was still a whole lot of work that went into my pitch for a TV show, and even with all my subscribers, statistically, I still got turned down way more times than I got picked up. If Netflix is just green-lighting everyone with a big sub count, then why doesn't I Did a Thing have a show, huh? Why doesn't Mr. Beast have a Netflix show? Oh, actually, he's doing just fine. By the way, if you are someone with a lot of subscribers, don't just walk into a studio and say, "Hey, I have a lot of subs, give me a show," okay? Walk in and say, "Hey, I have a lot of subs and free merchandise for you," okay? Diversification is key. Networks like Netflix, Cartoon Network, and Nickelodeon, they're in the biz of making content for their platform and in turn getting you, the viewer, to watch said content on said platform, thus generating a perpetual money-making cycle that everyone, including you, benefits from. Now, the executives in charge don't have all the time to come up with every single show they're going to make, so they turn to the general public, open their doors, and will listen to anyone pitch them their idea for a television series. But even if you have an Emmy-winning idea, if you're not able to properly sell your idea and win over the hearts of the network executives, it's not going to get picked up and developed. Then your only option is to independently fund and develop your idea yourself. But what kind of a loser would do that? And thus the art of pitching a show is born. You could honestly teach a whole class about this. Now, obviously, you can't just walk into a studio empty-handed. All right, big idea. What if we do a show where there's a talking alligator, right? And he's like, "Yo, what? I'm a crocodile." You gotta come prepared, but also not be over-prepared. I was actually surprised to learn this, but going into the pitch room with finished scripts, turnarounds of your characters, and plushies will actually hurt your chances of getting picked up. The reason for this is because executives will sometimes like to change parts of your show, and if you already have all the characters and story mapped out, they'll not want to pick you up because they feel like they can't change anything. You're not even supposed to write any scripts until after you get the green light, because the executives have to approve all the scripts you make and the writers that you want to hire. So if you ever pitch a show, just be open for changes. Which, I can attest, is a very different experience to what it's like on YouTube. What you do want to bring to the pitch is this super important document called a show Bible, and then you need to convert to that show's religion. The show Bible is a document that contains everything your audience needs to know about your show. In the beginning of a show Bible, there should be a 1-2 sentence description that covers the main synopsis of your show. It's kind of like an elevator pitch, but here in the biz, we call it a log line. I'll give you mine as an example. When James's parents move them to a tiny desert town where eccentric scientific minds have been brought together to do unfettered experiments, James finds himself surrounded by the children of these scientists and the offspring of their experiments. The result? Unlike in his last town, James is no longer the oddest kid around. I don't know if the show's been out by the time this video comes out, but we kinda lost the new in town theme. Like I said, the executives want to make changes. After the logline, you write a page-long backstory where you go more in-depth with your idea. Answer questions like, who are the characters? What are their goals? Where do they live? Just general stuff, because after the backstory page, you're gonna write all about your characters. This is the part of the Bible where you can just go balls to the wall with details and description. Who, how, and why are your characters? What are their wants, needs, fears, flaws, likes, dislikes, and general personality traits? These are important traits to think about even if a specific detail isn't going to be reflected in the show. Like in my Bible for the crocodile Max, some of the things we said he liked were the rain, raw chicken, and laying on warm rocks in the sun. Now, I don't think he got to enjoy a single one of those things in the show, but these are the types of questions you have to answer to get the clearest idea of who your characters are. You should also include drawings of your characters. This can help show their personality and body language, but just keep them to doodles, because again, they're subjected to change. Next, there needs to be drawings and descriptions of specific locations that the characters spend a lot of time in. This will help show the overall world and tone of the show. And lastly, I know it's long, that's why it's called a show Bible and not a show pamphlet. You need to write out page-long episode ideas. not scripts. This will show the executives what a typical episode would look like and the direction and tone you want to go with the show. Honestly, there's so much that goes into a show bible. I'm really only scratching the surface. If you are genuinely interested in pitching a show, or even a little interested in cartoons, then I would highly recommend looking at other show bibles online for inspiration and how they should be formatted. It's pretty fun looking through older show bibles and seeing the earliest versions of your favorite cartoons. This is what Mermaid Man and Barnacle Bill were going to look like. I mean, look, isn't that cool? Unfortunately, you can't just hand an executive your show bible and silently wait for them to finish reading it. You also have to energetically and flawlessly pitch your show. Executives listen to like 9 pitches a day, so if you're not selling your show with 110% enthusiasm, they're gonna pass right over you. So you have to practice your pitch like your paycheck depends on it. Me and the showrunner I worked with, Ethan Banville, practiced our pitch so many times. We practiced in front of a mirror, to our family members. We filmed ourselves practicing, and then watched the footage, gave each other notes, and then burned the evidence. We memorized our whole Bible, but despite everything, the first time we pitched, I was still nervous. I had no idea what pitching a show would be like. We brought in our stapled Bible that we typed out on Microsoft Word, and I thought, this isn't enough. This Bible doesn't even have a spine. I still thought we needed to bring in finished scripts and character designs to show the executives how much thought we put into the show. But Ethan reassured me, no, the executives don't want to be overwhelmed with content. But when we got to the lobby, I saw the group ahead of us pitching their show, and they had cardboard cutouts of their characters, and they were handing the executives custom plushies, and I turned to Ethan, we are so underprepared. When we got inside, we pitched the show just like we practiced 1,000 times, and then the executive told me that no studio would ever want to work with a YouTuber. Yeah, sometimes they don't even wait to tell you in an email that they're going to pass. Sometimes they just get it over with right then and there. So, you know, not the best confidence boost for your first pitch. But we kept on pitching, and we kept hearing a lot of no's. And if you ever pitch, get ready to hear that response. Everyone in Hollywood has a story of being turned down by everyone and then finding the right home for their idea. And sometimes really talented people work for years on an idea and it goes nowhere. So the fact that I was even able to make something and it didn't get canceled, I'm incredibly grateful for. But getting a show greenlit is not the only way to get it made. You can always put in the work and develop something yourself. No, you won't have a network backing you with tons of money, but if you truly believe in your idea, you should at least put something out for the world to see and over time build your own audience and then, who knows, maybe even sell it to a network. But not the one who said they never work with a YouTuber. They're horrible. Okay, that's all the time I got. I gotta get back to watching Oddballs streaming October 7th on my Netflix.
Okay, class, spell Wednesday.
I don't know how to spell Wednesday.
Well, James, just sound it out.
Oh, okay. So, like this?
No, James, it's Wednesday.
You said sound it out, and that's how you sound it out.
Ha ha ha! You think you have it bad? Du is spelt with an X.
I think it comes to no surprise that I'm terrible at spelling. I feel like everyone in life falls into two categories. Either you're good at math and bad at reading, or you're weird. And if you've seen my other videos, you know that I'm a math boy. My mom told me that I have dyslexia because she has dyslexia and I have all the symptoms, but we never got that diagnosed by a doctor, so... You can't make me take my meds, Mom! A lot of times what I do to cover up the fact that I spell lower than a first grade level is I will purposely misspell words to the point where it's obviously a joke. You thought I was doing that to be funny, but it's actually because I have zero self-confidence in my spelling and I don't want anyone to point out my mistakes. I mentioned this in a different video, but in elementary school, I was put into an honors program and everyone had to take spelling tests a grade ahead of their level. And by everyone, I mean everyone except me, because I failed every single spelling test. So I had to take spelling tests that were on level. Ew. Every week when we took a spelling test, I would have to move to the back of the classroom, and the teacher would stand right next to me. She'd call out everyone else's word, which had like 8 syllables, like anti-disestablishmentarianism, and then she'd turn to me and give me my on-level word. James, your word is cat. Also, 1 year our class did a spelling bee and everyone had to participate, and like, I didn't even care that I was the first one out.
Hey, that's almost my name.
Another thing that I mentioned in a pretty old video is that I used to have a speech impediment when I was little. I couldn't pronounce my ahs and I talked like this. I'm good now.
Obviously.
So every other day during school, I had to go to a speech therapy class, and one day the teacher who taught me how to pronounce my ahs, I'll call her Mrs. Kool-Aid, gave me this sheet of paper with a bunch of raindrops on it, and she said, "For every raindrop on this page, say the word raindrop." But then she just left the room, and I said, huh, well, I'm not going to do this. I didn't say Wayne drop a single time, because, like, no one was even there. No one would have seen me not saying Wayne drop, so why would I do something that I didn't want to do? But then, the funny part is, when she came back, she asked, "Are you finished saying your raindrops?"
No.
Well, how many did you say?
I didn't say any.
You stupid child. I told her the truth for some reason. I don't know why. It was probably the easiest lie in my life to get away with, but that's why I remember this story. I'm still mad at myself for telling the truth. And I had to say raindrop a bunch of times in front of her, and she would only go to the next raindrop until I said it right, and it was terrible. It really hurt my feelings.
Since I was struggling with reading and spelling, I had to get an IEP. An incredible, excellent personality, which meant I had to go to a special class for a little bit during school, and the teacher who taught this class was none other than Mrs. Kool-Aid. Oh, yeah.
I don't know why I said it like that. I don't remember anyone ever telling me I was put into a special needs class. I just remember going into speech therapy every other day, and then those classes slowly morphed into teaching me how to read and spell. I don't know, I thought reading this book would have helped me talk better. Two other kids were in the reading class with me, and I remember the day when reading for me just clicked. Us three were given a simple sentence to read. It was about bees. It was so simple. It was literally just, "To defend their hive from wasps, bees don't sting the wasp. Instead, they all crowd around the wasp and flap their wings to raise their body temperature, heating up the wasp until it dies." And then Mrs. Kool-Aid asked us, "Okay, how do bees defend against wasps?" And the other two kids said, "They sting them." And I said, "What? No, you moans! Didn't you weed this?" The words in this paper have meaning when placed in a certain order to convey information. Also, I never want to get hugged by a bee. So I was in these classes all the way until the sixth grade. I was getting better at reading. I still wasn't great, but I was getting better at it. And one day, Mrs. Kool-Aid said, "You know, James, you should try competing in the Battle of the Books." Battle of the Books? Battle of the Books?
Battle of the Books!
Finally, reading sounds fun! At my school, Battle of the Books was this competition where students were given a list of 4 books to read within a time limit of, like, 2 months. I don't remember how long it was. And after however many months it was, the contestants would sit in an auditorium and take turns answering questions about the books. And whoever got the most questions right would get a pizza party. And that's where the battle part comes in. We'd kill each other for pizza. And then there were 2 more rounds, each with 4 more books, so there was a total of 12 books you had to read. And we were allowed to be with a partner, so my partner was TJ.
"Hey, TJ, do you remember Battle of the Books?"
"Yeah, man, it was great."
Now, you're probably thinking that 4 books in 2 months isn't that hard, especially since they're kids' books. But as someone who didn't read any books on my own outside of school, it was a challenge.
But I discovered a way to cheat the system. I discovered something called audiobooks.
Instead of having to sit still and read the book, I could just have someone read the book to me. And I would get through the book so much faster. I'd be able to read a book in about 8 hours as opposed to reading a book never, because I would never be able to finish a book on my own. And I was actually able to understand what was going on. I legitimately thought that listening to audiobooks was cheating because of how well it worked. So I never told anyone my secret. Until just now. Please don't tell anyone. Also, I didn't just turn on an audiobook and start playing video games. No, I sat in my bed next to the CD player and followed along with the book, and sometimes I even took notes. I've wanted to talk about my love for audiobooks for so long, but I can't, because then people will think I'm getting paid by a certain company, but I'm not, and I'll prove it. Instead of wasting your money on quality audiobooks made by professionals, you guys should all check out LibriVox.org, where you can listen to free public domain audiobooks, which means there's only old-timey classical books on it, like Aesop's Fables, which, in my opinion, is all you need. Anyway, TJ and I did the Battle of the Books, and for one of the rounds, TJ was sick, so I had to answer the questions all by myself, and I never forgave him for that. And also, the whole time, I was keeping track of everyone's points, and me and TJ got the most questions right. My math skills are finally being used useful. I was already craving the pizza. After the last round, the teacher said, "Okay, I'll tally up all the points and let you all know who the winner is in a couple of weeks." But since I was keeping track of everyone's score, I already knew we won. I turned to TJ and I said, "TJ, guess what? We already..." Oh, this is the round that you were sick on. How did I not notice that until just now? But then, a couple of weeks go by, and I'm not hearing any news about a pizza party. I was expecting to walk into class one day, and there would just be a pile of pizza boxes waiting for me. But that never happened. The teacher in charge of the competition was the librarian, so one day I went up to her and I asked, "So, did you ever say who won the Battle of the Books? Also, my favorite pizza is barbecue chicken." And she said, "Oh, these two fifth graders won." So the Battle of the Books was for both 5th and 6th graders. I was a 6th grader, so I went to all the 6th grader battles. But apparently, there was some low-life 5th grader who got every single question right and stole my pizza party! And that taught me a valuable lesson. Even when you work hard, you don't always get what you want in life. But that's okay. Because one day...
you'll be an adult and you can buy all the pizza you want without having to read first!
Science fair. I was talking to a friend saying, "Oh, I know, I can do a video about the science fair and, you know, talk about how much it sucks." And she said, "Oh, at my school, we didn't do the science fair."
What?
That got me wondering, did other people not do the science fair? So I did my own science experiment on Twitter. I ran a poll and asked you guys if you even did the science fair and whether or not you enjoyed doing it. And 58% of you said you didn't have to do the science fair. Like, that was way more than I expected. That's the majority. I've renamed this group of people the lucky ones. And when I asked if you enjoyed doing it, 21% of you said you did enjoy it, and 21% of you said you didn't. I know Twitter polls aren't the most accurate sources of data, but I think it's safe to say that this is a pretty split issue. Now, I'm in the 21% of people who didn't enjoy the science fair. And don't get me wrong, I love science. Well, okay, that might not be true. I really hated biology and chemistry. That was just a mess. But physics was okay. Maybe I don't like science. I just like space and watching these. Bill and Neil, they're my buddies. Except Neil did hurt my feelings one time. We'll get back to that later. Alright, so let me briefly go over what the science fair is for you lucky ones who didn't have to deal with that. Apparently, it's a very American thing, right guys?
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, we started doing them, I want to say around 4th grade, and we would do this every year up until the 10th grade. The whole class would spend all day researching a topic that interests them, and then we would have to come up with a question that we could run an experiment on. An example of these questions are, does the temperature of a battery affect how long it will last? What color light produces the most heat? How does the shape of a rocket's fins affect its travel? All of which are projects I did. Basically, this was supposed to teach you about the scientific method, but what it really did was teach us how to procrastinate and make up data. And on paper, you might think, oh, that sounds like fun. I wish my school did the science fair.
No!
Here are some flaws with the science fair. First, you got the option to work with a partner. And of course, you want to work with a partner so you can split up the work and not do as much. Now, since I didn't have any friends, I would partner up with someone that no one else wanted to partner up with. But they wouldn't do any of the work. I only did the science fair with a partner once. From 5th grade on, I did my science fair projects alone. The second problem is that we had to come up with a question all on our own. And you gotta understand, we were just kids. We don't think as cognitively as scientists do, okay? Just a couple years ago, we still believed in Santa Claus. Except for me, my family didn't do Santa Claus. And now you want us to wonder if the ratio of a cylinder will affect its buoyancy? Like, come on. And also, we don't have access to any resources. You know, the science fair is a lot like an episode of Mythbusters. But what sets apart the Mythbusters from your average 4th grader is that they're really smart engineers who have access to explosives, while we can't even drive to Walmart ourselves. We have to ask our parents to take us. One year, I wanted to do an experiment on a certain type of soil, so I did research, I wrote everything all up, but then when I went to Home Depot to buy the soil, they didn't even have it! So I had to pick a new topic and start all over again. Now do you see why I think the science fair sucks? So okay, I think it would have been better in elementary school if we were assigned a question. I know the whole point of these things is about discovery, but we're all stupid, okay? I guess if you're anything like me and you chose a crappy question, you'll have a bad science fair. My very first science fair, after all day researching possible questions, me and my partner came up with a question, "What time of the day is the hottest?" Now, I already know the answer to this question, and in 4th grade, I'm sure I already knew the answer to this question too. It's noon. Like, I don't need to run an experiment on that. In fact, I can just go to Google and seriously just type weather and boom, there's my data right there. No need for an experiment. But the science fair isn't just finding the answer to your question. No, 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 no. First, after you research the topic, you have to write a hypothesis. A hypothesis is basically you guessing what you think the result of the experiment will be, but you don't write it down as I think this will happen. No, you write it like you know what's gonna happen. A formula. Formula, science. For a perfect hypothesis is if blank, then blank because blank. Let's use my battery experiment. I said, does the temperature of a battery affect how long it will last? So after doing research about how batteries work, a hypothesis for this experiment would be, if two AA batteries are used at different temperatures, then the battery in the hot temperature will not last as long because the battery's fluid will evaporate, which damages the internal structure of the battery. Oh, and spoiler alert, no, it doesn't. I put two batteries outside, two in the freezer, I let them sit, and then I plugged them into my Game Boy Advance, and they lasted the exact same amount of time. I learned nothing. So you also have to write up the materials you use for the experiment, then you have to write up the steps to do the experiment, the procedures, and you also have to write an introduction, basically just bullcrapping what you're going to do. Then you do the experiment, aka the fun part. Make sure you write down your results because you have to make a graph. You have to. How do you make a graph to show that batteries at different temperatures lasted the same amount of time? They did. You think you're done, right? But no, you gotta write up the results as if your graph didn't already perfectly depict that, and a conclusion. The conclusion is like the most insulting part of the science fair. You basically go through this checklist of questions that you answer. Was your hypothesis correct? No, my hypothesis was not correct. What mistakes could you have made in your experiment? I don't know, maybe I took the batteries out of the cold and hot and put them in a room temperature Game Boy and in a couple of minutes they both went to a room temperature. I don't know. How can others use this information you found? What do you mean? All the batteries lasted the same. I don't think anyone is going to put their batteries in their freezer to have literally no effect. Alright, and then you take everything you wrote, print it out, and then slap it onto a poster board. And everyone, and I mean everyone, would use construction paper as a border around the text to give the poster board a good aesthetic. I think the second most fun part of the science fair was choosing what word art font you would use for your title. Oh, and by the way, the teachers told us to have a creative title to catch people's attention. Like, that was part of the assignment. We got graded on the title. Basically, they were telling us to create puns for a grade. If you're doing a project that's measuring plant growth, Ready, Set, Grow, that was a very popular choice. And then everyone took their poster boards and presented it in front of the whole class. Those were the three most boring days of science ever, except for the day you presented. That was the most stressful day. And then after all that, everyone in the school put their poster board up in the cafeteria, and you know, then it was fun to walk around and see how other people decorated their poster board, and you could always tell whose mom helped them. So, overall, I didn't have a good time. Those 21% of people who did enjoy it, I'm glad you liked it, but me and the other 21% of people think you're huge nerds. And when I asked that Twitter question, I had some people messaging me saying, yeah, I got third place and all I had was a cup of dirt, ha 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 ha, and that made me wonder... Wait, it was a competition? So I think the key to a good science fair is to come up with a good question and also do a topic that you actually enjoy. One science fair, I did an experiment on rockets, and I had a blast. That would have been a good title. But for another year, I did What Color Light Is the Hottest? I just shined a lamp at a thermometer and switched out the bulbs. And I'll let Neil say what he thinks about that whole project.
Okay, red light is warmer than blue light. Interesting discovery, but not exactly revolutionary.
Neil, yeah, just completely discredit all my research. I'm fine. So, moral of the story, if you need an idea for a science fair project, do it on rockets. You don't even need a question. Just launch model rockets.
I don't know if any of you guys had to do this in high school, but in my high school, you had to take a physical education credit to graduate. So normally, to get it out of the way, in 9th grade, all the boys would take PE, and all the girls would take dance. But sometimes, the really white boys would take dance. And you could always point them out during dance recitals. So I actually took PE my sophomore year because I went to a preparatory school in 9th grade. But that was okay because I fit in quite perfectly with all the other skinny white boys. And there's like this long moment in the first 10 minutes of class where all you do is sit in the locker room and wait until coach says, "Okay, let's do this!" So one day we all got bored and just started flicking water bottle caps. You know, just the caps and the little whoop-ah! We just started flicking, you know, like little tiny frisbees. We took caps from the trash and we would just whoop-poo! Shoot them at each other, you know? Whoop-ah! And it was all fun, you know, and no one really got hurt, and I'm pretty sure I'm the one who started it, but whatever. And then, when we did our physical education class, it was, like, extra hard. Like, we ran two laps instead of one, and we had to do wall sits while holding medicine balls. And then afterwards, when we were all sweaty and tired, the teacher goes, "You want to know why today was extra hard? It's because you're flicking water bottle caps at each other."
What?
Fast forward a couple, a month, and these two kids get the idea to play a game called Bodies. And if you aren't familiar with that game, it's a game where you punch someone, that's it. You're not allowed to hit their face though, just their bodies. Which is why it's called Bodies. And you'd think at least one of us would be like, hey you guys. Oh wait, their voices should be squeaky.
Hey you guys, Coach didn't like that we were throwing water bottle caps before. Maybe we shouldn't do this.
So, you know, I obviously couldn't let that happen. Without watching. And these two kids start playing, and one kid isn't even punching back. Which is a strategy I would not use playing that particular game. And then all of a sudden, the dude taking the punches falls off his feet and hits his head on the hard tile and doesn't get up.
Did I win?
So we're a couple of young bros and we're like, hey bro, 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 bro. So we had to tell the teacher and the teacher got the nurse. And a little time passed and at that point he did wake up a little. And the coach asked him what happened. And he knew he would get in trouble if he told the truth. So he lied and said,
I don't know, I just passed out and got all these punch marks.
Although it is possible he could have legitimately forgot. And then the coach asked the class what happened. And everyone was like, he just passed out.
Yeah, I saw him. He just flopped down.
And we almost got away with it. Except one kid, I forget his first name, but his last name was like Ferwillikins or something. And he had the stupidest bowl cut too. So stupid. He tells the coach, they were playing Bodies. And person A falcon punched person B. And then we already know we're in a whole heck of a trouble. But the nurse called the PE teacher and said, this kid needs to get his stuff. And coach said to the class, someone needs to get this kid his stuff. I got it! I'll get his stuff. And I'm told that the class had to do lunges down the track field. But I wouldn't know, because I took my sweet time getting him his stuff. And then a year later I heard our PE teacher got fired. For separate reasons.
Hi everyone, I'm here with Jaden Animations.
Hi.
Today we're going to be drawing Pokemon from memory.
And yay!
We're going to do one from each generation, and there's a time limit of 4 hours per picture, so.
Alright, so strap in, this is going to be a long video, everyone.
Alright, so your Gen 1 Pokemon that I chose for you, Omanyte, Lord Helix.
And yours is Meowth.
Meowth?
Yeah, we're starting off easy.
Yeah, this is level one. No reference picture, just art.
My biggest, fear right now is being like, I'm a Pokemon fan, and then, drawing everything wrong. Oh, no. I feel like I should have studied for a test. I feel like I'm in school again.
Why is this so hard? He was, in every episode. Does he have a nose? I can't remember if he has a nose or not.
Lord Helix, I'm sorry.
Oh, crap. Oh, that's on the same layer. Oh, no. Maybe since he's, a villain, he should be you know?
He's, a bad villain. Not bad as in evil, but bad as in actually bad.
When I'm going to be editing this, I'm just going to have, a picture of it, off to the side.
I really feel like I'm missing something, but I don't know what else to add.
I mean, it's just, a shell and then, something popping out of the shell, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think I'm done.
Should we be giving any, drawing tips?
I always say practice.
That's true.
And people are like, Jaden, no, say something else. I'm like, I don't know what else to say. So you guys just have to practice.
Can't remember if Meowth has a nose. I'm looking at it with and without the nose. So, whatever. Okay, it's done. It's fine.
Lord Helix himself.
Aww. You actually did color it.
Aww.
You're pretty spot on. Yeah. Does he have a nose?
No.
He doesn't? I'm missing, a couple of, these. Whoops. And his eyeballs are like this, you know? Yeah. Okay.
All right, next one.
Next one. Your Gen 2 Pokemon is Houndoom. The grown-up of the Honduras? Is that the baby one?
Houndoor and Houndoom.
Whatever, Pokemon Master.
And yours is Flaffy.
Flaffy?
Yeah, do you know which one that is?
Explain it.
Mareep, the sheep one.
Uh-huh.
The very first sheep?
Yeah, the pink
it's
one?
It's the second one.
Wait. So it's like a sheep. An electric sheep. And that's pink.
Yes.
I got it. A little sheep afro. Oh, I'm doing it on the same layer again. Let me just Let me just extend the canvas. Here, you know what? I need to restart, like, a lot of it.
I thought you were going to say, I need to research. I'm like, no. Hey!
That's the whole point of these.
Is it weird that I actually sketch with a stabilizer? I think it has ears. Yeah, it totally has ears.
I know he has a skull on his chest. This looks like a seashell.
Something's off. I can't think of what, though. I know it has a little, like, sheep fur somewhere else. I don't know.
I was just drawing Manectric yesterday, and this is like the opposite. It's like the fire doggo versus electric doggo.
Wait. Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about the thing I was drawing. I was like, wait, my thing's a doggo? I thought it was a sheep. Okay, I'm kind of done.
Are you done already?
I mean, like, are we ever really done?
When did we start? We should, like, check the time every time we begin. Mine's not colored, and I think I'm missing some details, but I think it's as good as it's gonna get now.
Okay, well, now I'm not done coloring it. There's totally something missing. Did I even get the color schemes right? Oh, man. So this is what I drew.
Aww, it looks like cotton candy.
Yeah. That's aww, yours is... That's, like, really good. It's, like, wearing kind of, like, a turtleneck skeleton.
You put the fluff on the wrong side of the
belly. You're right.
All right. Next one. Yours is Absol.
Absol? That's the white little wolf thing, right? Yours is Flygon.
Flygon?
Yeah. Is that too easy or is that too hard? That's too hard.
Which Pokemon did you, like, stop playing the games at?
The third one, Ruby and Emerald. I was caught up with all the hot new trends up until the fifth one. When I was choosing your, like, sixth generation one, there were some that I was not recognizing.
Uh-oh, what if I chose that one? Then you're in trouble. People are gonna be like, oh, how do you not know who this looks like? It's easier when you watch someone do it, okay, guys?
Aw, man.
I got the ones that were aesthetically pleasing to me.
You mean the ones that were cute? Is that just how you say it?
I was never, like, into the cute Pokemon. I was, like, the really cool ones that were, like, powerful and stuff.
I have not gotten that far into the drawing, so if we, like, cut to you and you're, like, almost done, that'd be embarrassing.
Do insects here? They have to.
Do they?
Is that a stupid question?
Got a nice little profile shot of whatever the heck this is. Oh, I'm so glad we're not recording this and putting it on the internet. I think this is my worst one. Have you seen the new Ghostbusters movie?
No, I heard it sucks.
Oh, I haven't seen it either, so. If I had time to do line art, this would look so much better. I started doing the line art, but I shouldn't have. Okay, I'm gonna give you a secret. I haven't even seen the original Ghostbusters movie.
What?
Right? Yeah, I know. I wonder if I see this new one, since I don't have anything else to, like, judge it off of. I wonder if I'll think it's better. I shouldn't color. I shouldn't.
I heard all your undos.
Just pretend I colored in the rest of the claws. Here's what I drew. It's, oh man. Don't even give a pity. Aww. Oh wow, yours is good.
Aww.
Yours is, like, really spot on. Yeah, no, I was way off with my Absol.
If Absol had a pre-evolution, that would be it.
And it doesn't even have ears. I'm excited for this one, just because I want to see what you do. All right, yours is Licky Licky.
Oh, no. Yours is Floatzel.
Is that the one Ash had in the cartoon? And it's like a water one?
Yeah, he had a Buizel, which is the first one. And then it's the next one.
I don't know what that looks like.
Floatzel. Like float, and then Zell, as in pretzel. Imagine an otter, but bigger, and he's got, like, floaties on him.
This is so far not turning out that good.
Do you think they make Pokemon ugly on purpose?
No.
Do you know Probopass?
No. Is that, like, one of the new ones?
It's like a rock one with a really big nose and a mustache. Oh, yeah. It's really ugly, and a lot of people don't like it.
I know a lot of people don't like the, like Garbodor? No, that's the sexy one that everyone likes. The garbage
one.
No,
I think it was Garbodor.
Oh. What's the sexy one likes?
What were you talking about?
I'm talking about the trash one.
I've played all of them except for Black and White 2. That was when I had my falling out. I was like, yeah. But then I came back to it.
Shoot, this is looking like a kangaroo. I kept thinking, like, there's something up here on the forehead. But I didn't know what. And you're like, you know what? I think it would look better with this. Do you think food tastes better when you didn't make it?
Yes. Isn't it like you aren't used to the smell while you're cooking? I saw another thing where like people would have two glasses of milk and one was dyed orange.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, oh, this milk tastes better, but it was the same one.
There's got to be some way we can turn this into a competition.
Didn't like a whole bunch of different stuff happen with Minecraft? Now there's like a story now.
Oh yeah, there's like an end. You do it and then like you can still play. I know it has the floaties. Now I'm just like seriously just like adding designs.
I'm pretty much done.
The tail always has some design on it. This is what I drew.
And this is what I drew. Ah, you keep drawing them all really cute.
Are you sure? I mean, whatever, okay. I didn't think you'd get this, but Licky Licky has a Wi-Fi symbol on him. Man, there was a lot I was missing. I knew there was something on his forehead. He doesn't have ears. Yours is Rufflet.
Oh, no.
It's a bird one. It's like a bald eagle. It's like a baby bald eagle.
Oh, okay. That helped me a lot. I was about to draw the wrong gen bird. So you have to draw Crocodile.
Wait, is that the first one or the second one?
It's the third.
What?
Do you still know which one I'm talking about?
It's a crocodile.
Yeah. And it's red.
And it's red. And the third one, he's standing up with his arms crossed. Or am I thinking, is the second one the one with cross arms?
Little fun fact. My first games were Ruby and Sapphire.
Uh-huh.
And my first Pokemon ever was Torchic, and that's why Torchic and Blaziken are my favorite.
Uh-huh.
In the sprite, Torchic has 1 foot up, kind of standing up. I always thought he only had 1 foot, and then he evolved, and he's like, oh, I have a foot now. I have both of them.
I always, you know, Rattatat? I always put in like one too many atatas. Rat-a-tat-a-tat. Okay, I'm starting over. I know its eyes are like bulging. That's all I can think of.
Kind of. There's like a part that bulges out, but it's not his eyes.
What? I can't. Jaden, I can't. I'm just going to draw a crocodile.
I can see the image.
Right?
In my head.
Same.
But I just can't.
But I tried to draw that twice and I've given up.
How close are you to being done?
I mean, I can call it quits. It's so not a Pokemon. You're going to look at it and be like, that's just a crocodile.
This is a weak round. It is a crocodile.
Yours is Inkay.
Inkay?
Am I saying that right?
Yours is Noivern.
What is that one? Oh, is it the bat one? That new bat one?
Yeah, and he's got like the ears.
Oh, he does have ears. The one that I saw that I like, that doesn't, that like I've never seen that before. It was hands coming out of a rock. Like if you held that one up and like a Digimon and you said, which one's the Pokemon? I'd be like, neither of them are Pokemon. This is not right, but I don't care. I'm making it cute.
I wonder how many people are gonna dislike this just because we frustrated them.
Like, I'm not taking it seriously anymore. This is why you need drawing references.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with drawing references. I saw a comment one time and it was like, Jaden, you use references to draw your Pokemon. I'm like,
yeah.
What else? Why are you mad at me? Oh, this is going pretty well. And then I just like stopped and looked at it and I'm like, oh, this doesn't look right.
I'm not making it look cool. I'm making it look derpy. All right, and then it totally has little bat wings. Throw designs on the wall, see what sticks.
This poor thing.
Perfect. I'm done. All right, this is what I drew.
This is what I drew.
Aw.
Aw! Every time I see him, it's just adorable.
Thanks. Okay, the nose is not right. And man, his wings are a lot crazier than I thought.
You got the, like, the V on his face.
So these were my Pokemon. This one's not really a Pokemon. That one didn't count. What have we learned, Jaden?
Reference photos are important.
Thanks for watching. Yeah, if you haven't seen Jaden's video, you should.
Please.
I don't know if you could tell, but we kind of did a collab.
Bye.
Bye. Wear your seatbelt.
And action.
So, Mr. James,
is it rolling?
Yes.
And action.
So, Mr. James, is it true that you wrote a book?
Oh, that thing? Yes, the rumors are true. One afternoon, I was just thinking to myself, why aren't I a published author yet? So I just jotted down some notes and doodles, and then I thought, you know, people should pay money for this.
So, like, it's just a bunch of pictures?
No, I added words, too. It's a collection of stories and opinions of mine, some of which I've already made into videos, and some that are completely original new stories. Like, one chapter is all about the science fair, and yeah, it is the same story I used in the YouTube video, but I also go more in depth with the story, and I draw new pictures.
YouTubers have a reputation of writing bad books. Does this concern you?
Oh, bad books, huh? I'll have you know that my book was the number one best-selling book in literature, criticism, and theory. Do I know what that means? No. But did I beat Tyrant, Shakespeare on Politics? Yes. Does that mean I'm better than William Shakespeare himself? I'll let you be the judge when you pick up your copy of the book, link in the description.
I'll give you a clue. The answer is yes. Are all authors as condescending as you?
Do you even know what that word means?
James, is there anything special that happens to people who order at VidCon?
Yeah, the people who pre-order at VidCon get a signed copy.
What about people who aren't going to VidCon?
Sucks to be them.
Cut, come on.
Haha, that was a good joke. So I actually am going to be selling signed copies. I'll be signing the first 1,000 copies to people who pre-order the book on my website. Check the link in the description. Also, speaking of my site, I've revamped the whole thing and got a bunch of new merchandise. Check it out if you have some free time. Christmas is right around the corner, guys. There's also non-signed copies available if you just want to pre-order it regularly. Or you can wait until August when the book comes out and buy it at Barnes & Noble or your local bookstore. And depending on how well these signed copies sell, I'll release more. We'll see. If you're interested, then I'll update everything on Twitter, so follow me on Twitter to be updated. Anyway, authors sure can be stuck up sometimes. Like this one time when this pretty well-established author was coming to my town and was doing a signing. I say well-established, but I'm sure if I said his name, you guys wouldn't actually know who he is. Anyway, at his signing, he gave an hour-long talk, and he said he wasn't going to do a Q&A segment because he said he'd been an author for so long that he felt that he already answered every question ever. Okay, Mr. Yahoo Answers, sorry our questions bothered you so much. And then after you listen to him talk, you gotta go up to meet him to get a book signed, but he was the most stereotypical, I'm too good for you celebrity I've ever seen. When you got to his table, he didn't say anything to you, and if you wanted a picture, he wouldn't even look up at the camera. So my family has this picture of all of us standing and smiling next to this guy, just looking down, reading a book. So I will follow in that author's footsteps and only take pictures with fans while signing my book and looking like this. Contrast to that when I met Stephen Pastis. Pastis? I should have looked up how to spell, say it. He's the creator of a comic strip called Pearls Before Swine, and all you need to know is that his comics are in the newspaper and he's really great. He came to visit Arizona and I was 15 at the time, so I was making stick figure comics, and I wanted to impress Stephen, so I got out my ruler and protractor and I very carefully drew this comic. How was your run? Well, let's just say Justin is all pooped out.
What happened?
I don't want to talk about it.
Get it? He pooped his pants. This isn't based off anything in real life, okay? I was 15. Shut up. I went to his book signing. He was really awesome. I showed him my comic. He laughed and he told me to keep going. And now I'm a YouTuber. I mean, it wasn't just what he said that got me into doing comics and YouTube. I wanted to do that way before I met him. Anyway, he was nice. Ironically enough, I was never a fan of reading, and I think a big part of it was that teachers forced you to read books you didn't want to read. So if this book becomes the next Romeo and Juliet or Grapes of Wrath, and teachers make their students write book reports on this book, then I'll make it easy for all of you. In the description of this video, I will create an already completed book report for this book. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. James, won't the teachers know if all the book reports are the same? Yes, they will, which is why I added some blank spaces for you to put in your own words. It's sort of like a Mad Lib that you turn in for homework. And this book report doesn't even have to be on my book. You can use it for any book. So if you have a book report due tomorrow, then check the link in the description. Trust me, you'll get at least an 80%. You know, the people who already pre-ordered this book are pretty ballsy. They don't even know what this book's about. For all they know, it could have just been a single picture of me laughing at all the money they gave me. But it's not that. I promise. That's just the inside sleeve. And that's the end of the video, everyone. I'll see you at VidCon.
Hey there, Frederick. What you doing? Oh, hello, brother of mine. Why, I'm just studying for a math test tomorrow.
That's pretty neat, Frederick.
Braxton, brother, shouldn't you also be studying for the test?
Well, you see, Frederick, due to my high levels of apathy and the stress of knowing that I'll never be good at math, I've decided to completely give up on even trying to do good on the test.
So, what are you gonna do instead?
Oh, I'm just gonna go watch some YouTube videos.
School sucks! Especially math! Ugh!
When will I ever use geometry/trigonometry/calculus in the real world?
I think you're only saying that because you're bad at geometry/trigonometry/calculus.
Why is everyone so quick to hate on math? Math is easy. How many essays did you have to write for math class?
Oh, that's right. e to the i pi plus 1. which is zero. One thing I would change about math class is I think it's dumb that you have to show your work. Ugh, do you know how much harder it is to cheat when you have to show your work? Dear Math, solve your own problems, tweeted MatPat. I hate Matt, replied Protato Gamer. Hey, that's not very nice of you, Prote. All he did was tweet about math. Maybe what you really hate is spelling. Or maybe you really do hate MatPat. Well, two can play at this game. When will I ever need to know about the themes and symbolisms in To Kill a Mockingbird when I go into the real world? That's right, never! You don't need to know anything to be in the real world. Okay, I think we can all agree that a lot of what school teaches you isn't that important. And there's definitely more important things schools could be teaching you, like taxes or how to pick a good president. But I'm not the one who makes the curriculum, so why am I even talking about it? Regardless of how broken your education system is, you should always stay in school, kids. Right, Dave? I was a good student in school, not counting college. And look how I turned out. I'm not using everything I learned in school almost every day. Sure, you'll probably never need to know that much about Shakespeare's plays. But hey, now you know how to read old-timey complicated books. And no, you'll probably never have to find the area under a curve ever. But now you can say that you can. And isn't that what life's all about? So enough with this introduction. I'm going to be telling you all some of my school stories. What do you mean Jaden already made a video on school stories? Did she call them school stories? I already stole from her like 2 videos ago. Okay, just, I'll think of something. So enough with this introduction. I'm going to be telling you all some of my academy anecdotes. So you know how guys can pee standing up? It's amazing. Ladies, if you've never peed standing up, then you're missing out. But there are some rules that apply with having the superpower. Like, don't go to a urinal right next to another guy unless it's absolutely necessary. Or, if the urinals don't have a divider, then everyone can all agree to keep your eyes and mind straight. These rules have been taught to us at a very young age. By the time we were in elementary school, we were all pros at peeing. Except for some of us when we were asleep. But that's not important. So at this point in life, we all should have known what we were doing. But there is this one kid who I guess no one ever taught him how to pee correctly. This kid, I'm not going to say his race because it doesn't matter, but when he went to the bathroom, he would pull his pants and underwear all the way down to the ground. Some of the ladies watching this might be thinking, wait, is that not how guys pee? Ladies, you'll just have to trust me on this, but that is the most wrong way a person can pee. The first time I saw the kid doing this was when I was in the urinal right next to him. Pee faster! As us two bros were peeing, a third bro walked into the bathroom, saw this kid's bottom, and just went, ooh, and walked out of the bathroom. I wish I could have done the same. How do you tell someone, hey man, when you pee like that, everyone can see your butt. So just, here, let me show you how to do it. I don't know what happened to that kid, but I think he would agree with me that math is easy. He was Asian. When I was little, I had a very weird sense of humor. So in the 5th grade, there was this girl I'd known for a long time. We weren't strangers or anything. And one day I said to her, you have 2 big blue zits right there. And I pointed at her eyes. I was talking about her eyes. I called her eyes zits. Get it? She, immediately slapped me. Probably because the joke was so awful. And that was the first time I ever got slapped by someone who wasn't a family member. And yes, it was Priscilla, the girl I sat next to in the cardboard boat video. She claims that the slap was an accident and that she was just trying to fake slap me to scare me. But I think she was really just self-conscious about her eyesits. One time, my 6th grade teacher, who was the same height as all of us, threw a stapler across the room because we wouldn't stop talking. Here's an anecdote about the first time I got detention, and it isn't that exciting. I was in the 7th grade and our class was at a computer lab. And the kid sitting next to me, his race doesn't matter, so I'm not going to say it. Asian, kept changing the computer wallpapers to cats and he kept showing me. To be fair, I thought what he was doing was hilarious. Then I asked him, can you change the background to Chuck Norris? That just goes to show you how long ago this story took place. He showed me what he did, I laughed, but then the teacher said, who's changing the wallpapers? She was able to see everyone's screens from her computer, and the kid said, me and James were. Dude, don't bring me into this! You were the one changing the wallpapers. I mean, I was involved a little, but don't drag me down with you. We ended up getting detention, except my school didn't call it detention. They called it CARE, which I'm sure was an acronym for something. If it wasn't an acronym, that would have been a weird thing to call detention. Let's just say it stood for Kids Are Really Extra. The whole time I was in CARE, I kept thinking in my head,
don't cry, don't cry, don't cry. If they see you cry, you might as well move to China. And that was the only time I got detention. Except it wasn't called detention. So I still have a clean record. All right, here's the last anecdote. This one happened when I was in the 11th grade. I was in an AP US history class, and I had it for a 0 hour. So that meant I was at the class before school even started, and I was way too tired to learn about presidents. I was sitting in class when all of a sudden I sneezed very loudly. And it was an above average sneeze, like one of those sneezes where you had to lean into it. And after I sneezed, this kid near me said, "Hey yo, Mr. Teacher, can we get some tissues? This boy's got a bloody nose." And I thought, oh shoot, I do? Well, that sneeze was pretty violent, and I did pick my nose a few minutes ago. And then the teacher looked right at me and said, "Oh yeah, you can just go to the bathroom." So I got up, and as I was walking to the door, I felt my face and realized, wait a minute, I don't have a bloody nose. I turned around, and there was a kid who actually did have a bloody nose walking towards me. I'm not gonna say the race of the kid because it doesn't matter. Canadian, but I was in a pretty awkward situation. So I punched myself until I actually did get a bloody nose. Nah, I'm just kidding. What I really did was I said out loud, "I have to go to the bathroom too." And then I left. I didn't really have to go to the bathroom. I didn't want to see another exposed butt anyway, so I just waited outside awkwardly for a long time. I got an A in that class, by the way, if you were wondering. I still don't use anything I learned in that class.
I think that everyone at some point in their life should work in a fast food or retail job. Not to improve their work ethic or anything, but so that everyone knows what it's like to have that kind of job. They wouldn't work in fast food their whole lives, maybe just like for 6 months, just so they get a feel for it. So with that, let's talk about the time when I worked in fast food. I used to work at a very small local sandwich shop. I don't know if any of you guys heard of it. It's called Subway. Our spokesperson was in the news recently. I don't know if you guys look at the news. Did you hear he got beat up in jail? I kind of want to meet the person who beat up Jared more than Jared. Not in person. We wouldn't meet in person, obviously. But, like, he would be behind bars, and I would just look at the guy who beat up my spokesperson. How many people get to say that they beat up a fast food icon who is also a pedophile? Only one, and it's that guy. Okay, but seriously, guys, working at Subway was probably one of the most easiest jobs out there. I don't know why I'm about to complain about it to you guys. We got free cookies. And you know the comic with the Subways in Hell? I was actually working at Subway when I made that comic. I just think it adds sort of a little bit of value to it. You see, the owners, who are husband and wife, can you believe it, of the Subway I worked at owned two stores. One of the Subway stores was in a Walmart on an Indian reservation, because we have those in Arizona, and the other Subway was the Subway I worked at. And since the Walmart store was always busy, the owners would spend 99% of their time at that store. So I didn't really have a boss most of the time. On the off chance the owners did show up, they would just pick up some food and then they would make sure I was making sandwiches the right way. And every time I made a sandwich in front of them, they would always find something wrong with it, without fail. You put on too many olives. Do you know according to the Subway formula, you're only supposed to put on 8 olives on a foot long? 8! One for every other bite. That's just ridiculous. Can you imagine someone just counting out 8 olives? Nobody does that. I usually worked the closing shift, and at the end of the night, we would turn the alarm and we'd have 60 seconds to get out of the store. But one time I had the opening shift, so I unlocked the door to get in with my key, and the alarm went beep, beep, meaning I had 60 seconds to turn it off. No big deal, right? I've turned the alarm on all the time when I was closing. So I go to the little control panel, and I type in the code, and nothing happens. The beeping is still there, and the clock is still ticking down. So I go, okay, I'm going to press each button very carefully. I'm going to make sure each button makes a beep when I press it. Beep, beep, beep. Nothing still happens. So I go, okay, I'm going to make sure to press each button very carefully. And I start thinking, did they change the passcode without telling me? Well, this is the only passcode I know, so we're just going to try it again. And I press each button very carefully. Beep. 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 And it goes quiet. And then the alarm goes off. I still had like 20 seconds left. But I guess when you get it wrong 3 times, it automatically assumes that you're a burglar. So while the alarm is going off, I look on the contact sheet for the owner's cell phone number. I step outside, I call him, and he doesn't pick up. So I go back inside, find the number for the other Subway store. They open an hour before we do. Someone picks up with their stupid voice, "Oh, thank you for calling Subway. I'm blah, 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 blah. How may I help you?" And I go, "Hey, is Mike there?" That's not his real name, guys. Don't worry. And they go, just a minute. "Yeah, sure. I have all the time in the world. The cops might be on their way, but take your time." So Mike picks up. "Yellow. Hey, Mike, this is James. What's the passcode for the alarm?" "Who is this?" "It's James. What's the passcode?" "What are you doing there, James? Why aren't you answering the question?"
I have the opening shift. Is the alarm going off? Yeah, no one told me the new code. Yeah, we changed it. It's the last four digits of your social security number. Oh, okay, thanks, Mike. I don't know my social security number! So I finally get the alarm off. No one showed up, thankfully. Which, I actually don't know if that's a good thing or not, now that I say it out loud. We did have a store manager who would, like, make the schedule and sometimes tell us, hey, can you guys do a better job at your job? But other than that, she was cool! She watches my videos, and so do her little brothers. They're big fans. Shout out to Ivan and Andy. Those are the brothers. So get this. At Subway, you only work with one other person. Just you and them in an empty Subway for 5 hours. I mean, we weren't, like, empty all the time. Okay? And when you're not making sandwiches, you have other stuff to do, like stocking the chips, or we had stuff to do. But okay, we did watch a lot of Netflix and do homework, so I mean, it was that other person you worked with would make or break your entire shift. It wasn't the annoying customers. I kind of got used to annoying customers. So I worked with a lot of crappy people. And I also worked with a lot of people who I would probably never become friends with except in a work setting. You see, you gotta understand the type of people who got jobs at Subway. Potheads. Most of them were potheads. And some of them were really cool. I'm just gonna go over a couple of the characters that I worked with. There was Tyler. I freaking love this guy. He smoked a lot of weed. He actually taught me what vaping was, and he got me into Clash of Clans. I actually mentioned him and his girlfriend in my riddles video. I don't know if I ever told him that. And of course, I have to mention Corey. He was cool. We watched How to Get Away with Murder on Netflix, and I've also hung out with him outside of work. What him and Tyler had in common is that they would actually do their job, which you gotta appreciate. Then there was this guy. Get this, who was also named Jared. He loved marble, and that's like the only thing he would talk about. I can say these things. He doesn't watch my videos. There was Sarah. She was cool. She made me a bread bowl. And her boyfriend, Jay. He talked about chakras and third eyes. He was interesting. And also, there's Anthony. He's cool. What's up, Anthony? For the 100,000 sprinkles video, I actually went back to Subway to use their scale because I knew they had one. And we counted 500 sprinkles again just to be more accurate for the 100,000. And Anthony helped me count. Instead of working. I mean, at least he got paid minimum wage for it. So two more stories before I go. One time, Jared asked me to take out this pile of trash, and I was like, oh, okay, I'll just put this pile of trash in the dumpster. And as I was taking it out, I saw that there was a chip poster in the pile, and I thought, this is too cool to throw away. I'm gonna keep it. So I took it home with me, and then the next day when I went in, people were saying, oh, where's the chip poster? We can't find the chip poster. We haven't seen it anywhere. And I'm thinking, I have the poster. I decided not to tell anyone that I had the poster, and it's still hanging up in my room. Sorry, boss, if you're finding out about this now. Okay, and then the other story. I was working with a manager, and we were just making sandwiches like usual. And I noticed that when we toasted a sandwich, it would burn the paper a little on the edges. That probably shouldn't be happening. So then a customer asks for just bacon toasted. And the boss lady puts some bacon on paper, and then puts it in the toaster. And we don't have a setting for just bacon. So then when she opens the toaster, there was a fire on the bacon. So then she starts to whack it with the little metal tray thing, but all she ended up doing was fanning the flames, making the fire bigger. You got this, right? Then I went in the back and I got the fire extinguisher and I actually used it. I single-handedly saved that Subway. Wait, what have I done? Is it okay if the bacon's a little crispy and has nitrogen and carbon dioxide stuff on it?
Using right that there. Jab to paw, boom. Looking for the right time for that right...
Yeah, that's me. You're probably wondering how I got in this situation. What's that? You're not wondering? This is just the natural life cycle of YouTubers, is what you're thinking? Well, why did I decide to participate in iDubbbz's Creator Clash charity boxing event where some ripped Australian guy was going to punch me in front of everyone I ever loved? On my birthday! And I wasn't even getting paid to get punched in the head! Well, I used to always be the skinny kid growing up. Not because I was eating healthy, no. I was eating nothing. I would see all the healthy food in the fridge at home and go, aw, dang. There's nothing to eat! It wasn't until March of 2020 that I started exercising more seriously. There wasn't a lot else to do during that time, if you know what I mean. I have a really buff friend, DJ Welch, who you might know as the beefiest guy in Creator Clash. We got into a Discord call one day, and he showed me how to exercise, and we liked each other so much that we continued to work out virtually 3 times a week. And I learned a really good life hack to keep a consistent workout schedule, which is to have a gym partner. Especially one that's more experienced and knows what they're doing, and between sets you can compliment his muscles completely platonically. When you're working out by yourself, it's so easy to think, my feet hurt. I don't want to work out. I want to binge all 12 seasons of The Big Bang Theory and not laugh at all. But if you have someone waiting for you at the gym expecting you to lift weights with them, you're not going to flake as much. Plus, you get to look at muscles in the gym platonically. Sometimes you have to search for opportunities. And sometimes Ian from the channel iDubbbz drops into your DMs and asks, "Hey, want to get in a fight with a bunch of other YouTubers?" Completely platonically. It was probably the fact that I had been working out for quite some time, mixed with ignorance of what I was actually signing up for, that I, without any hesitation, was immediately on board with the idea and responded in all caps, "Yes! I've actually been working out!" I was going to be fighting an Australian YouTuber named I Did A Thing, which is such a stupid username. His whole username is made up of 4 one-syllable words. That's like a whole sentence. Dude's got a whole sentence in his username. I didn't have any information on I Did A Thing. While most fighters gotta actually meet their opponents and go on their podcasts, I had to stalk my opponent's Twitter for any information I could use. Aha! A clue! He says in this tweet that he's 6'4". I'm in trouble. But at least I Did A Thing had even less information about me. Try finding a recent picture of what I look like in 2022, Alex. Google says I'm 5'9 for some reason, which, now that I think about it, that would make our fight seem way more stacked in his favor. So, yeah, I'm totally 5'9 and not 6 foot. Yeah, I Did A Thing was clobbering on a slightly taller Michael Reeves. I told DJ, "Hey, I'm gonna be in a boxing match. Good thing I'm starting to put on muscle." And DJ said, "Oh, no. What we've been working on won't help you in boxing whatsoever." What? So-ever? So Ian found me a boxing coach named Michael Flores, who's a 4x Emmy-nominated belt holder and a total bro. I started training in January with the fight happening in May, and even though the final results may not have looked like it, I did train hard for this and took it very seriously. Michael wanted me to train every single day except for Sunday, and DJ could have me on Fridays.
DJ, Michael's gonna be my new gym bro, bro. Bro, I'm gonna miss lifting with you, bro.
The very first time I trained with Michael, he told me, "Boxing isn't something that you should take lightly. When you step into that ring, you're going to war." And I said, "Oh, yeah, dude, don't worry. I work out. I know all about war, like, a lot." But it wasn't until my third training session where it actually hit me, huh, I'm going to be fighting I Did A Thing in front of all my fans and loved ones and will have an incredible amount of motivation not to lose and look bad. And I Did A Thing will be fighting me in front of all of his fans and loved ones and will also have an incredible amount of motivation not to lose and look bad. This is probably what Michael was talking about. And this is where I learned another amazing workout life hack. If you need motivation to get in shape, pay someone in Australia to come beat you up on your birthday. You'll tell yourself, "Am I really not going to go on a run today when there's a dude in Australia who wants to beat me up? Am I really going to eat this cupcake when a dude in Australia wants to punch me in the solar plex?" In February, Ian tweeted out, "Looking for a heavyweight content creator, 200 plus pounds, who is down to box. Last spot available, you will be fighting a legendary Twitch streamer." And in March, DJ messaged me, "Hey, is Ian still looking for someone?" And it turned out he was still looking for someone, so in April, DJ got added to the roster, and me and him are reunited. So DJ had about a month and a half to train, which was a little less than me, but I think he turned out fine. Since none of us were professional boxers, that meant this was a brand new and frankly bat-crap crazy experience that we were all facing together. Every single fighter trained hard for months, and we all respected the gosh darn hell out of each other. The level of camaraderie at this event was insane. And platonic. None of the fighters had any real beef with each other, except Dad, maybe? I don't know, it's hard to get a read on that guy. Whenever a fighter was done with their match and they returned to their locker room, regardless if they just won or lost the fight, everyone would applaud them and tell them good job. At least that was the blue corner. I don't know what the red corner was doing. So, let's talk about my fight. If you can call it that. There are a surprising amount of strategy and fundamentals in the sport of boxing, but the moment that that bell rings and there's a dude from Australia trying to kill you mixed with the most adrenaline you've ever felt in your life, all those fundamentals go out the window. I lasted
0.74 rounds. I wish I could tell you about all the intricate strategies that played out in my head, but the only thoughts I had during the fight were survive, survive, survive. Ow. Where am I? After months of work and literal gallons of sweat later, I only lasted for a minute and a half, which actually isn't too far off from what it's like working in animation. I had a few notes on my performance, like I definitely should have moved my head better. And yeah, I got hit in the head a lot, but I did get Alex with this nice body shot and he did this weird spinning move, and then I just watched him do it for some reason. It is what it is. Half of us had to lose, and I lost. And now there exists some amazing gifts of me getting socked in the head. These are going to outlive me. At the end of it all, I'm still extremely glad to have been a part of this. Not only did the event raise
$1.3 million
for
Alzheimer's Association,
but I also went out of my comfort zone and challenged myself. Even though I got my butt handed to me, the journey was worth it. You don't grow as a person by winning all the time. You have to lose in order to get stronger. I didn't think I'd ever say this, but I still want to continue boxing training, just without the looming threat of a chiseled kangaroo beating me up on my birthday. I have a much deeper appreciation for the sport of boxing and anyone who is brave enough to step into the ring. And if this was the first boxing show you ever watched, I hope you enjoyed it. And if you're thinking about putting some gloves on and giving boxing a try, then I totally recommend it. Hitting things is a whole lot of fun. I want to thank my coach, Michael Flores, who's an amazing guy and always pushed me to do my best, even after I lost. I want to thank DJ, who's been an amazing virtual workout partner, and I probably wouldn't have even had the confidence to participate if it wasn't for him. I want to thank my girlfriend, who got me my custom outfit for my birthday and supported me through all my training. I want to thank Anissa and Ian for putting on this amazing event. As first events go, it went over flawlessly. I want to thank my opponent, Alex, along with all the other fighters who train hard. It was super fun meeting all of you.
Happy birthday to you! Happy birthday, dear Jay! Happy birthday to you!
Okay, so I'm just going to get right into the meat of this topic. I love reading fables. If you weren't paying attention in 10th grade English, a fable is a short story, usually with talking animals that have a moral at the end of them. A good way to remember is that the word fable starts with an F, and so does furries. So, some examples of a fable you might have heard are the tortoise and the hare, Humpty Dumpty, Pacific Rim, and the autobiography of Hillary Clinton. This one's a fable because the main character is a bit. I'm just kidding. Humpty Dumpty's not a fable. So there's this guy named Aesop, and he's best known for creating a bunch of fables. He's written over 655, and seriously, I don't know why for some reason we can't find the exact number. How many fables has he written? Over 655! Oh, so 656? Like, what's the range here? Unfortunately, he has died, so he won't be writing any more fables. So why can't we get the exact number? Like, what the heck, guys? And he also had a very strong no-photo policy, so no pictures of him were ever taken. Because he was born around 500 BC. I don't even think he knew what a camera was, so here we go. This is what he supposedly looked like. And what I like most about fables is that the wording is so, like, Shakespearean and old-timey, and it makes you feel like you're smart for reading these short paragraph-long stories. And even better, they have a moral at the end of them, so once you're done reading, you're like, oh man, that was deep. Like, every single fable can end with one character dropping a microphone. Like, the whole story is just build-up to that one moral moment. Okay, so I'm going to read some of my favorite fables to you guys. I'm not going to read them how Aesop wrote them, though, because he had so many unnecessary smart-sounding words when really all of his fables could be shortened down to, like, 3 sentences. So here we go. Aesop's fables in my own words.
Belling the cat.
So there's these mice that get together, and they're trying to come up with a plan to get this cat to stop killing them. And one mouse is like, oh, we could put a bell around the cat, you know? So now we could hear it or something. And this other mouse is like, yeah, all right, yeah, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Who's going to put the bell on? Okay, so this one's kind of actually stupid. I don't really know what the moral is. Like, maybe no one wants to be the person to sacrifice themselves for the good of humanity or my sanity or... Okay, here's my version of the rest of that story. So after the mouse said that, the other mouse goes, oh, geez, other mouse, you're right. I didn't think of that. Well, I guess I say we all grab our toothpicks and kill the cat. You know, at least that ending made sense. A bell, pfft.
How about you poison it? Or, like, move somewhere where there's not a cat in the first place?
The horse and the groom.
So there's this horse and a groom, which is not the wedding kind. It's an actual groomer who just calls himself a groom. So this groom spends all this time brushing the horse and making it look pretty. And he also takes some of the horse's oats and sells it for extra cash. Okay, stop right there. Aren't oats supposed to be really cheap? Isn't that a thing? Okay, so the horse is getting malnourished and says, you know, you should really stop worrying about brushing me and more about feeding me. Man, that's deep, I think. The moral is, don't steal your horse's oats. Especially if it talks, like you will never hear the end of it. The farmer with the goose with the golden eggs. So there's this farmer, and he somehow gets a goose that lays golden eggs. And now you might be thinking, what's with all these gooses that lay golden eggs? Jack and the Beanstalk did it. The Simpleton Brothers did it. Well, did you know that this is the very first time a goose laying golden eggs has ever appeared in writing? I actually don't know if that's true. I made it up. I mean, it might be true. I don't know. It was 500 BC, you guys. It was a long time ago. And the goose only lays one egg a day. And the farmer gets greedy and wants more eggs. So he thinks, ah, I bet all the eggs are inside the goose. So he chops up the goose and guess what? There's only more goose parts in there, not eggs. Okay, so the moral, know how basic things work. Especially if you're a farmer and you don't know how geese work. Or at least be close friends with someone who knows this. Hey man, I don't think that's how geese work. I mean, I get how you might think this is a magic goose because everything about this is physically impossible. But we could already live pretty decent lives with just one egg a day. Like, we're already in the top 1% now. How can a goose carry around a golden egg inside of itself? Do you know how heavy gold is? If there's solid gold, can a goose ever have babies? This seems like an evolutionary dead end to me. The bat and the weasels. So there once was this bat, and he fell. Somehow. Aesop never really says how it fell. It's a bat. It can fly. Okay, so the bat gets caught by a weasel. Like, one of these things? Okay, so you're saying that a bat gets caught by a weasel because he fell. Whatever, okay. So the weasel says, I am an enemy to all birds, and I'm going to eat you. And the bat goes, I'm not a bird, I'm a mouse. Oh, what are these things that look like wings? Oh, these? That's my blanket, because I'm cold. Okay, that part wasn't in the story. So the weasel lets him go, but then it happens again with a different weasel, and this weasel says, I am an enemy to mice, and I'm going to eat you. And the bat goes, oh, tiny weasel, but I'm not a mouse. I'm a bird. And then he lets him go. Again. Sometimes Aesop wrote the moral you're supposed to take at the end. He did it with this one, and the moral verbatim is, look and see which way the wind blows before you commit yourself. So are you saying to follow the crowd? Like, go with the flow? That's not really a good moral, Aesop. Also, why didn't the bat just say, I'm a bat, losers, and I can fly later? It's also teaching you to make up lies on the spot that contradict your first lie. That's how you get caught lying. Okay, so last fable, the fox and the crow. So this crow has a piece of cheese in her beak, and this fox comes along and is like, oh, you're so beautiful. Oh, I just love your feathers. I wish I could just hear you sing. This crow is now very flattered, and she goes to sing, and then the cheese falls out of her mouth, and the fox eats it. And then the last line, this is beautiful, the fox says, you have a voice, madam. I see. What you want is wits. Moral of the story, everyone wants to steal your cheese. Don't let your guard down for a second. That would be a good t-shirt design. Like, it would say, everyone wants to steal your cheese, and then it would have like a silhouette of a fox and a crow. Someone make that t-shirt. I'll buy it.
Mommy, why do humans hate us?
I don't know, Matthew. Our species is completely harmless to them, and we keep the mosquito population down, who are responsible for killing more humans every year than other humans do.
So, humans have no rational reason to fear us, but they still do?
I'm afraid humans aren't that smart, Matthew. Sleep tight. Don't let the bed humans bite.
Love you, Mommy.
I love you too, Matthew.
Mom?
I think the hate that spiders get is a tad bit undeserved. Okay, fine, if you're in the shower and you see a spider crawling up your leg like a freaking pervert, then that's an appropriate time to freak out. But other than that, spiders are most likely not going to hurt you. Their webs are too weak to trap you, they don't know how to open doors, and there's only like a 50% chance that they're venomous. Okay, but for real, unless you live in Australia, the chances of you dying by a spider bite is pretty low. There are venomous spiders, yes, and if you're having a negative reaction to a spider bite, then you should get treatment, but a large percentage of spiders are harmless. Even the Black Widow, known as the most venomous spider in North America, won't kill you if you're a healthy adult. Their bite will be painful for a couple of days, sure, but like, you'll walk it off.
That was a joke. If you get bitten by a Black Widow spider, then don't walk it off. Go see a doctor.
And hey, if you're lucky enough, you'll get superpowers. So, wait, the two most dangerous spiders in North America are the brown recluse and the Black Widow? What are you trying to say about dangerous colors, America? Oh, wait, the great white shark's even more dangerous. Never mind. Technically, sharks are, like, the second least dangerous animal out there besides puppies. Because, like, they don't want to eat humans. I mean, like, if you had to fight a spider and a shark, this shark would win. Also, spiders kill pests. According to this comic I made in 2014 and this National Geographic article, a single spider can eat about 2,000 insects a year. So if you're not a fan of flies, moths, or mosquitoes, which incidentally kill 600,000 people a year, then you're on Team Spider, because they're also not fans of them. Well, they are fans of them, but they are fans because they eat them. I'm not saying you have to be roommates with arachnids. I'm just saying that if you see a spider, don't put it through torture continuously smashing it with a blunt object. It's still moving! It's still moving!
Kill me.
Instead, get a cup and carefully place it over a spider. They're really dumb, so doing this will be super easy. Then scoop up your new best friend with a piece of paper and yeet it back into the wild with the rest of God's glorious creatures. Yeah, actually, there's a high chance that they won't make it being thrown into a completely different environment, but they should have thought of that before they decided to live in my house. Even though a spider has 8 eyes, they have terrible eyesight, so that spider that landed on your face did not do it intentionally. Some spiders that live in caves are completely blind. They don't even have 1 eye. But even if they did have eyes, their whole world would still be pitch black. What a sad life to be a part of. Just every time you're outside seeing the sun, just think that somewhere there's a colony of spiders just in pure blackness, just never seeing the sun, never seeing their children smile or graduate college. They're just sitting in a cave for all their life. So is nature, and that is the way the cookie crumbles. Also, we're forgetting the most amazing thing about spiders, which is that they're incredibly talented in web design. Proportionately, the silk that makes up a spider web is stronger than the fibers that make up a bulletproof vest. So next time you go to a gunfight, put on a spider web instead. The amazing thing about spider webs is that not only can they save Wilbur from being slaughtered, but it's just stupid incredible that something so small can make such an intricate shape from nothing but the material inside their own bodies. The golden silk orb weaver spider has too many middle names and has enough silk inside of them to make 3 full spider webs. And it's this guy's job to pin that spider down and pull out all of its silk like some kind of spider predator. It's okay though, the documentary said he was just harmlessly immobilizing the spiders. I can't believe this is someone's job. I don't think telling people I'm a YouTuber is that bad anymore. So, what do you do for a living? I harmlessly immobilize spiders with thumbtacks and pull silk out of their abdomen to add to my ever-increasing collection. What about you? Oh, I make YouTube videos? I see people with arachnophobia being irrationally afraid of these harmless little guys, and I just don't see the sense of fearing something that ultimately does good things for the ecosystem. But you know what we should be afraid of? Bees! Bees are terrifying! Look, they're sucking the blood out of this guy to make honey! Oh, they're dying at an alarming rate? Good! Okay, that was a joke. Bees are, without a doubt, the most important insect on this planet. Not only do they have the best work ethic of any living thing on Earth, which is why none of them are YouTubers, they also pollinate 30% of the world's crops. Don't ask me who pollinates the rest, because I don't know. Without bees, humanity would turn to pure anarchy. Bees are so important that world-famous comedian Jerry Seinfeld made a documentary about the life of a bee and what the world would be like without them.
But ever since 2006, bees, just like all the memes say, have been dying at an alarming rate. The scary thing is that scientists don't know exactly the reason for this bee-pocalypse. But they think it has to do with new pesticides being used on farms, parasites that kill the bee, and global warming. So once we figure out how to fix those three problems, we'll be in good shape.
It's a little bee pun. We like to have fun around here.
Now, what can you, a concerned citizen, do to stop the dropping population of bees? Most likely nothing, because I don't think anyone watching this makes laws about pesticides or stopping global warming. So we just gotta sit back and hope the people who make those laws know the importance of bees. But maybe you should plant a couple flowers just to be on the safe side. The reason I have a fear of bees is that I've gotten stung by a bee not three times, not four times, but two times. Now, obviously, as I've grown, I see the importance of bees, and I know not to throw rocks at them. The first time I got stung, I was outside, and I guess I was playing too close to a beehive, because I got stung on my arm, and I cried a lot. The second time, I was in my backyard, barefoot, and I was walking around, and you know how sometimes when you're about to do something, and your brain realizes that you're about to make a mistake, but your body is already committed to the motion, and you don't have enough time to stop yourself? So I was in the middle of taking a step, and I saw that I was about to step on a bee, but my body didn't have the reaction time or the motor skills to avoid the step, and... I'm sure the bee was just acting in self-defense, but... Man, that scarred me. Some people may have an allergic reaction to bee stings, and they should go to a hospital if they get stung, but in my case, it just hurt a lot, and my mom put baking soda over where I got stung, and I cried. When people found out I was afraid of bees, they would always tell me that bees are docile creatures, and they only sting you if they feel threatened. They would say the same thing about spiders too, by the way. So whenever I would see a bee, I would silently freak out and stay as still as a rock, cause unlike spiders, with bees, you're not allowed to fight back. You'll both lose if that happens. I gotta show this bee how unthreatening I am. They should be able to just take a look at me and know that. But then, when a bee lands on your arm... Holy frick. That's true fear. You just have to quietly watch the bee, hoping it didn't just have a bad day and decide to end its life on you. That never happened, though. Ever since I took a more calm approach to bees, I've never been stung. And I've never been bitten by a spider, either. Wasps, though, they're just mean. They can pack up and leave for all I care. I don't give a crap about wasps. So, what did we learn? Boys and girls, come hear my greeting. I hope you don't plan on sleeping. Tonight, for while you are dreaming, evil awakes, unearthed and creeping. There's things that thump, things that bite, things that go bump in the night. What are these things, you sit and ponder? Brace yourselves. We call them monsters.
What? He's gonna tell us about monsters, but they're not gonna be that scary.
Silence, you dirty apparition! Don't you see the danger you are in? For what I speak is 100% real. Don't believe me? Just ask my pet eel.
This guy is nuts.
What?
I'm not an apparition. I'm a ghoul.
The first monster we'll see today is something that, likes to eat hay. First they champ, then they stamp, then... Okay, I can't speak in rhymes for the whole thing. I have a question for you guys. Are you familiar with the term furry?
What?
Well, after doing research on these monsters, I don't think furry is a new concept. Humans, for whatever reason, have always been obsessed with personifying animals. And who can blame them? Look how cute these guys are. Now, a lot of these monsters follow a similar pattern. So if you ever wanted to Frankenstein up a monster, all you have to do is take two already existing animals, one of them being preferably a human, and then you just gotta put them together. You all know about mermaids. One part sexy, the other half is just some lady. Well, do you know about this even scarier combination? It's called a hippocampus. Half hippo, half college. They say after four stressful years, he accumulates $100,000 of debt and no one in his field is hiring. Oh, I'm just messing with you guys. Okay, but for real, a hippocampus is a half fish, half horse.
Oh, like the Neopet.
What?
Yeah, Fiopian. I had one when I was like two. I used my Christmas paintbrush on it.
You guys aren't scared of a literal seahorse?
Well, how does it kill people? Like, can it turn them into stone? No, but the Scandinavians have a version called the Kelpie that tricks humans into riding them, and then it drowns the humans. Probably should have started with that one. That's okay, I guess. All right, Edward, if a murderous horse doesn't put you on edge, then how about this? A monopod. Yeah, that's right. It looks just like a regular person, but it only has one leg. Whoa, are you calling amputees monsters? No, this amputee has one giant leg. And by the way, these guys date back all the way to 400 BC, way before the first amputee ever existed. Also, despite them only having one leg, they're supposedly very fast, so imagine this guy aggressively chasing you at midnight. Yeah, I'm sure you'd piss your pants too. What about this? A blemmy. Again, looks like a regular person, but oh wait, where's its head? I don't see it anywhere. Oh, it's on its chest, like some kind of Pokemon. Come on, does this not terrify you? How would you give this guy a hug without suffocating him? My dad doesn't have a head. Also, he rides a horse, so this is all a pretty normal Tuesday for me. Alright, it's fine that you're not scared, because I've been saving the best monsters for last. Everyone, meet the Serpopherd. It has the body of a lion, the head of a lion, but the neck of a snake. Ugh, it's so gross. Why would anything need that long of a neck? So it can talk to giraffes? Imagine if it could retract its neck, and then you just think it's a normal old lion and say, hey, that's pretty scary, but at least it's 20 feet away from me, and then its head would just extend out of its body and then bite your head off. Speaking of snake-based creatures, what is the second most mischievous animal? Answer, the snake. Snakes represent Slytherin from Harry Potter, and those guys are always up to something, and snakes were responsible for the fall of man. But do you know what the number one most mischievous animal is? Answer, the fox. He's been in a ton of fables. He's a master hustler. So the fox and the snake are two of the most mischievous animals. But what if they had a baby together? Well, take a look at this monster from Chile called the... I can't say it. The Jirivulu, there we go. It's a half fox, half snake, and it has a claw for a tail, and it also creates whirlpools to drown people. Now this would be a really cool monster if it wasn't so terrifying. You know what? I got even more snake-based monsters to show you. Take a look at the Amphisbaena.
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 That's not right. It's a half snake, half snake, but the same half. It's a snake with two heads on both ends for double biting action. I think it'd be cool if there was a creature that was the snake's tail on both sides. That'd be so useless. Oh wait, that's just an oversized worm. How would either one of them poop? Great question. I honestly don't know how a real snake poops. And the last snake-based monster I'm going to show you is called the Chelalita longicollis. That's its Latin name. Its real name is the snake-neck turtle. It's a lot like the Serpopard with its long neck, but instead a turtle. But I doubt you'll have to worry about these things. There's no way these abominations can be real. No, those are real. Huh? They're indigenous to Australia. I saw one at the zoo with my dad. There's no way these things can be real. No, they're definitely real. But do you know what isn't real? All of us. None of us are real, James. Why do you think we all have the same voice? You're talking to yourself again. It's been 3 weeks since the accident. You need to snap out of it. What are you guys talking about? You're totally real. So, did I scare you? Huh? You guys scared? Hey, you! Knock it off in there. I understand that there are things that I don't understand. For example, theoretical physics, or how to make friends. But I do know that the world is not flat, that vaccines work, and listening to people tell me otherwise is admittedly a guilty pleasure of mine. Whether it's conspiracy theories or horoscopes, I love watching people pour their heart into something they genuinely believe in, only for me to go, I disagree. But please, continue. There are some beliefs that I don't agree with, but are absolutely fine to believe in, like thinking bucket hats look good on someone. But I think we can all agree that some beliefs can be incredibly damaging to a person, or even humanity as a whole, like the anti-vaxxers, or racists. So I discovered a new trend, and I'm not sure if it's just kids being kids, or a mentally damaging belief system, but I'm still gonna talk about it and explain to my audience the importance of critical thinking and to notice the red flags in dangerous beliefs.
So what am I talking about? I unfortunately fell down a rabbit hole and discovered a community of mostly kids on a phone application called TikTok doing something called reality shifting. This, by the way, is not a small community of like 20 people. There are amino groups with thousands of members, videos with hundreds of thousands of views, and they have their own acronyms. OMG. Reality shifting stems from the belief in parallel universes, which, I gotta be honest, I'm not completely sold on that idea to begin with. You say that Schrodinger's cat is both alive and dead, but cats have 9 lives, so are 4.5 cats dead? How is a cat half dead? Either way, someone supposedly very smart has said that every decision you've ever made has caused the universe to copy itself and create a new reality where you made the different decision. I had cereal for breakfast this morning, but somewhere there's a reality where I ate my hamster for breakfast. Does that mean I create a new universe every time I scratch my butt, and somewhere there's a James with better manners? So times that by 8 billion people making decisions every day, plus the decisions made by, like, dogs and jellyfish, right? Those count, I think. And we get roughly infinity total realities. If you've seen Endgame, you know what I'm talking about. The reality shifting community says that since there are infinite realities, then there's a reality where GameStop stock is incredibly low, or that COVID didn't happen. Or perhaps there's even a reality out there where Hogwarts is real, and a messenger owl just dropped off your acceptance letter. And through the right meditation, you can transfer your consciousness from your current reality, your CR for short, to your Hogwarts desired reality, your DR. And for some gosh darn reason, Hogwarts is the number one shiftable destination location. But obviously, it's not just Hogwarts. Any fictional universe is fair game. You could go to the Hunger Games or Lord of the Rings. I'm not sure why, though. A lot of bad things happen there. And since all logic is thrown out the window, cartoon and anime realities are shiftable destinations. Because if Schrodinger's cat taught us anything, it's that there are some universes that are just 24 drawings a second. So because there are allegedly infinite realities, people will write down what they want their desired reality to be, and this is called a script. It's funny, you know, normally scripts are made to tell fictional stories, but these people think that what they write down will be 100% real. And you can make a script of whatever you want. You can say, I want to shift to Hogwarts and be in a relationship with Draco Malfoy. I mean, not me, this is just an example. Now listen, you're a smart kid, okay? Hopefully I don't have to explain to you that that's not how life works. If you believe you can hop into different realities, then that's great and I see no problem with it. Is what I would say in a different reality, but in this reality, I have a lot of questions. If you can shift your consciousness into a different version of you, what happens to the alternate reality you's consciousness? You're just taking over someone else's body. This other you had a life and a family, unless you're going to a YA fantasy novel, and you just took over their whole body. What if there's a you in an alternate reality that's like, I want to live in a reality where there's a pandemic and I'm sadder, and then they shifted here? What happens to your consciousness? You don't trade. The reality shifting community says that when you shift, you leave behind a clone of yourself. Obviously. So when you shift, there's someone's consciousness unaccounted for. What about the realities where one of you had waffles for breakfast and the other had pancakes? Both of these yous are pretty much the exact same. So then both of you will want to reality shift to the exact same Harry Potter reality. Do you have to share a body with the other yous that have shifted to the same reality? Are you telling me that Voldemort and any fictional villain is real? How come half of us didn't get turned to dust when Thanos snapped? If anyone can reality shift, are you telling me there's a chance that Voldemort could download TikTok and reality shift here? If you go to Hogwarts, you're leading Voldemort right to us. How can there be a reality where magic is real? Sure, I don't know how parallel universes work, but they're parallel, so the laws of physics should still be the same, right?
But James, I know that reality shifting makes no sense and is impossible, but then why do so many people claim to have shifted?
Because they're dreaming. Shifting happens when you fall asleep, and if you fill your subconscious with things from your desired reality, would you be surprised that you had a dream about Hogwarts? Something about this trend doesn't sit right with me. A lot of the reality-shifting TikToks were done by kids. And kids, as you know, can get really obsessed in the fandom and do some cringy stuff. If these kids were making fanfiction and writing themselves on a date with Bakugo, that would be totally fine. Healthy, even. Heck, even if these kids flat out said, "I love Harry Potter so much that I want to manipulate my dreams to be about him." That would be fine too! But something about actually believing that you're astral projecting into a fictional universe? I don't know, that level of obsession just feels unhealthy, my guy. And also, back off Bakugo, he's mine. The problem with reality shifting and actually conspiracy theories as a whole is that they pretend to be based on factual evidence when they're entirely a pseudoscience. You start off with a scientific idea, multiple realities, and then you make up whatever you want and use what the scientists have said about multiple realities as proof. Even though no scientist has said anything about being able to move your consciousness outside of your body, or that you leave a clone of yourself behind when you reality shift, or that cartoon universes exist, I've seen people in videos say that they've done research on reality shifting, but I feel confident in saying you didn't get a degree in quantum physics. I want you to cite your sources and show me the studies, because research isn't just believing what other people said on TikTok. These TikToks get impressionable kids to believe in reality shifting in pretty manipulative ways, saying that if you didn't shift, it's because you didn't believe hard enough. When you get these doubts and say, "Oh, I can't shift, I don't even know if it's real anymore at this point," try and ask yourself after, "But what if it's real? What if I can shift? You want to find out, do you?" I get it. Harry Potter is a cool world. That's why they made a whole theme park about it. Who wouldn't want to drop out of a Muggle public school and live in a castle with a bunch of soft British boys? And also magic or whatever. But you need to be mindful about where you're getting your information. I've watched hours of flat earthers and anti-vaxxers talk about their beliefs, and these people get their information from non-credible sources, and they end up pushing more fake information online, and it creates this echo chamber that warps their worldview. I don't want kids watching these TikToks or going on Amino and essentially get lied to and think this is how the world works. I'm hoping that all of these people will look back at themselves in 10 years and go, "Yeesh, I can't believe I was so obsessed about a thing, I literally tried to astral project myself across the multiverse. Right, Bakugo?" I know that this reality can suck sometimes, and right now it's looking pretty bad. But like it or not, this is the one reality we get. A lot of things may be out of your control, but according to theoretical physics, we make a lot of choices. And all our choices lead us down different paths. So what you need to do is not give up on this reality for a literal fictitious one, but instead to make choices that will make this current reality your desired reality. Thank you all for coming to my TED Talk.
You know, I've realized something. If I keep making videos about my life stories, then soon I'll run out of life to talk about. Which is why sometimes I'll agree to do a thing just so I can make a video about it later. Perks of being a YouTuber. So my mom is friends with this junior high school teacher. Kudos to any junior high school teachers watching. It amazes me that anyone would be okay sitting in a room with 27th graders and not even getting paid that much to do it. My mom was talking to her like moms do, and I guess I came up in conversation. And my mom told her that I wanted to be a math teacher, but then I became a YouTuber instead. So my mom's friend, I'll just make up a fake name for her, I'll just call her Mom's Friend. Mom's Friend comes up to me and says, "Hey, would you be interested in helping tutor some 7th and 8th graders?" Ew. I think the only reason she chose me was because, one, I'm good at math, duh, and two, I'd be good with kids or something. I told her I'd do it because 7th and 8th graders are the worst kinds of people. Unless you watch my videos, then you're cool. I'll finally get to live my half-hearted dream of teaching kids math. Now, I didn't make this video to talk about math, okay? That's boring. Before I even started tutoring these kids, Mom's Friend asked if I wanted to chaperone on a field trip so I can get to know them. Okay, 7th and 8th graders are between the ages 11 and 13, aka the worst time to be alive as a human. You're going through puberty, you're super self-conscious, no one wants to be your friend. 7th grade is just one big popularity contest, and everyone's losing. No one looks back at themselves when they're in 7th grade and thinks, "Yeah, I was alright." There's definitely some sevies watching right now thinking, "Oh, I'm not that bad." Doesn't matter who you are, you're gonna look back on these years and hate yourself. I remember when I was in the 7th grade, I noticed all the cool kids wore really low socks. The shorter the sock, the cooler you were. So I always wore the lowest sock possible. Most of the time, you couldn't even see the socks. It looked like I was wearing nothing. That's how cool I was. Sometimes, I put on girl socks because they were the lowest socks I could find. I was so
cool.
Anyway, I was going to be chaperoning these kids on a field trip. They were going to the big college here in Arizona. Can I just say ASU? And this was supposed to get them excited to learn and pursue a higher education. Kinda awkward bringing me along, the successful college dropout. Hey kids, you should go to college. It's important. I don't count, though. And I didn't know what to expect on this field trip. YouTube says my biggest demographic is 18 to 24-year-olds, but I don't think that's true. Because it's usually kids leaving comments and emailing me asking to collab. Either they're the loud minority, or there's a bunch of kids lying about their age on YouTube. I walk into the classroom, and everyone's head turns. Is that the Odd Ones Out? Oh my goodness, it's the Odd Ones Out! Kids started forming lines, they were taking pictures, they were hugging me, and I'm just kidding, that didn't happen. No one cared. They were all still talking in their cliques. With all the kids I've talked to over the internet, that sounded wrong. With all the kids I've talked to, I was hoping that one, at least one kid had seen my stuff. But nope. So I just sat in silence and played on my phone. We get on the bus. I don't remember where I said this, but on school buses, all the cool kids sit in the back. Well, this time the opposite was true, because I sat in the front. We arrive at the college. I go to this group of kiddos and I say, "So what do you want to be when you grow up?" And at that moment, I realized I sounded exactly like one of those adults who try to talk to kids but have no idea what to say. I was planning on them saying astronaut or doctor. And then I was going to say, "Well, you could learn that in college." That's what I was going to say. "So what do you want to be when you grow up?" They said nothing. They didn't say anything. They just looked at me like, why is this old guy trying to talk to us? So then I just walked away. Alright, I need a new question. I wanted to somehow bring up, "Hey, I have over 1 million subs on YouTube." But that's tacky. You don't just start conversations like that. Sub counts have to come out naturally. So I went up to a new group of kids and I said, "So, do you guys watch any YouTube videos?" And most of the kids did the same thing, looking at me like I was weird. But one kid said, "Rice gum." Ugh, ew. Here's actually the story of how I met Ricegum. So I was at VidCon, and all of a sudden, a huge crowd of people just goes running by. And I said, "Who's that?" And someone else said, "Ricegum." And then I said, "Oh, who's that?" And I didn't really meet him. My friend Gabe did, though. So we were given a tour of this college, and it was actually kind of interesting because it was the college that I would have attended if I wasn't trying to save money. It was fun seeing what could have been. There were other junior highs doing tours at the same time, so we crossed paths with this preparatory school. I'm guessing it was a preparatory school because they were wearing uniforms. And this one kid in the other group just pointed to me saying, "The Odd One's out! The Odd One's out!" over and over, and I just said, "Hey," back to him. And that was it. We just kept walking. No pictures or high fives. Man, why couldn't have that kid been in my group? Preparatory kids are so much cooler. So we do the tour, and I was in the back not talking to anyone. We ate lunch, and there was actually a kid in my group who did know me. His name was Connor. I think he was too shy to talk to me at first. Thanks, Connor. Where were you when I asked your peers what they wanted to be when they grew up? But he was cool. We ate lunch together. The field trip was almost over, and I kept thinking, man, I did not connect with these kids, like, at all. Well, they are only 7th and 8th graders, so it's not like I need their approval. Hey kids, I have 1.8 million subs on YouTube! It was tacky to use my sub count to get validated by these children, but after I said that, everyone loved me. I think I made a good connection with them. And okay, all the kids I tutored that were failing math, 90% of the time, they weren't failing because they didn't understand the material. They were failing because they were missing assignments. So alright, I'm about to tutor everyone watching this video. And this goes for you college folks too. Kids? Turn in your work. Even if it's late, it's better than a zero. Alright, lesson's over. We're not gonna do an end card for this video because I wanted to show you guys something. Here are all the cards I made for the plushies. Good news if you live in the States because they will most likely arrive before Christmas. Sorry if you live somewhere else. Also, if you ordered a custom signature, you're just gonna get one of these boys. We want to get them out before Christmas, but then we're going to send the special ones later, so you'll get two cards if you ordered special instructions.
Bobby, what do you have to say?
Also, another important announcement is I'm going to be taking a Christmas break. I have been working nonstop on videos since VidCon, so I am in desperate need of a break. I'm still going to be posting comics and maybe some other non-animated video if I can, but this is the only animated video this month, so I guess Merry Christmas. Can I say Merry Christmas? Whatever holiday you celebrate, just wear your seatbelt.
Look at that. This is my...
I haven't hung it up or anything, it's just on the floor.
May I have your attention, please?
your attention. Please, may I have some? Please. What if I put up gameplay of Subway Surfer and used a robot voice? Would that keep you stimulated?
Wikipedia says that people born between the year 1981 and 1996 are part of a group called Millennials. And I am a 96 baby. Hello, Year of the Rat, what's up? I'm cusping on that millennial Gen Z line, so I can relate to all you Gen Zers, okay? I know what cap means, I know what drip means, and I also don't remember where I was when 9/11 happened. However, Gen Z, there is a difference between us. We're both a generation that grew up on the internet, but you grew up with the internet. We grew up with the internet. The internet didn't used to always look like this. It has metamorphosized a multitude of times. Now, if you talk to an older millennial, they'll tell you the horror stories of the late 90s internet, how the internet used to be paired with your home's landline, and if you don't know what a landline is, good. If you wanted to surf the net at blazing speeds of 7 kilobytes a second, then you couldn't use your telephone at the same time. This was before texting even existed, so if you needed to talk to someone, you had to call them and look up their phone number in that 20-pound weapon known as a phone book, and then if someone else was using the internet, they'd get the pleasure of listening to... Although, if I had to make a sound that represented the entire internet, it would sound exactly like this. I didn't grow up with dial-up, but I did grow up in a time where the internet looked completely different. By the time I was exploring the interwebs, we got speeds up to 1 megabyte per second. So the highest quality video you could stream on YouTube was in 240p, or this big. And it would still buffer. A lot. Gen Z, you weren't there when YouTube had a 5-star scoring system and the subscribe button was yellow and people would put these things all over their videos. You weren't there when the videos were in a 4:3 aspect ratio because that's what TVs looked like. You weren't there when a background for a website would be a never-ending grid of a JPEG and music would play against your will and your cursor would turn into a sparkly wand and... Okay, that's actually pretty cool. Whatever happened to that? And then the person who built the website would go, it's looking pretty good, but you know what this web page really needs? A counter that'll tell you the total number of people who visited. Let me just copy this HTML code I found online. And if you're around my age and you also had unsupervised computer time, then great, you were also there to experience the pre-puberty years of the internet. Try to imagine the internet without social media. No Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or MySpace. Were people back then just not talking about themselves or sharing their opinions online? Were we as a society more connected with the people we knew in the real world? No, of course not. People have been sharing their opinions online since day one. They were just doing it on random message boards. I know it sounds trivial nowadays, but there was once a novelty in being able to type anything you wanted into the computer and then someone else you didn't know would instantaneously respond. Even Neopets, a game targeted to children, had chat rooms and let anyone send unfiltered messages to children. I'm surprised I didn't meet any weirdos. That's one thing that'll never change with the internet. There will always be weirdos online. In fact, most of a weirdo's life is spent behind a computer. I would know. I think people loved sending messages so much that sometimes your friend would send you a message that said,
"You've just been hit by the duck truck. Send this message to 8 of your friends and you'll be as sexy as a truck."
Ignore and you'll be hit by a 16-wheeler. You have 7 days.
And instead of blocking that person, some people would keep the chain going. Hey, I have a quick question. When was the last time you ever had to type a specific website into your address bar? Probably somewhere about 10 years, give or take. You just type in a Y, and then YouTube pops up. You put in a T, you get Twitter, and P gets you picturesofalligators.com. And if you had a specific question you wanted to ask the internet, you just Yahoo it, right? Yahoo? Oh, no, that's not the one you kids are using. You kids are using that new search engine, right? Ask Jeeves? I know there's like 4 main websites that everyone goes on, but back then, instead of having a social media account, people made their own websites. So there were a bunch of different websites for you to explore. And to help you find those websites, you had a few search engines to pick from. Everyone loves to dunk on Bing for even attempting to be a search engine, but back in the day, Google had some competition. Obviously, I can see why Google ultimately won the search engine battle. Google is a great company, and I would recommend Google to all my peers and coworkers. I love Google! As much as I love the internet, some of the best memories we had on the computer weren't even on the internet, were they? Sometimes the internet would just go down. But did that stop us? Did we go outside? No. We were still able to supply ourselves with hours of entertainment even without an internet. All you had to do was click Start, All Programs, Accessories, Games, and then... Space Cadet Pinball. I guarantee every millennial watching this right now just got hit with a big wave of nostalgia. This game might seem simple because there's only 2 buttons that you can press, but when you really got into it, this game had a whole lot more going on. Trust me, Space Cadet Pinball was all we had sometimes, and I cherished every second of it. But if you were anything like me growing up, you were also practicing your art skills. And luckily, every computer came pre-installed with a top-of-the-line painting software that every artist needs. Yeah, this program's got everything. There's a line tool, and a bucket tool, and a circle tool. And sometimes when I was really bored, I would make a black rectangle, scribble the freeform selection tool on it, and then blammo! Yeah, I still got it. I just made a masterpiece. And, fun James bonus tip, for some extra self-induced epilepsy, hold down Control-I, which will invert the colors, so your masterpiece will go...
Oh my god! Oh, it hurts to look at!
Hey, looks like you're trying to create a conclusion to this YouTube video. Would you like my help?
No, Clippy. Even when you were around, I never used you. I just liked having you there to keep me company. The internet is still a relatively new invention that is ever changing the way we live. And we have yet to see the full effects of what being connected since birth does to a person. The fact that the accumulation of all human knowledge can now fit in your pocket? That's going to affect your day-to-day life! Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you to get off the internet, touch grass, and live your life to the fullest. Otherwise, I'd be a hypocrite. And unemployed. There's no denying all the positive things that the internet has to offer. But I'm also not going to deny all the negative things that come with instant gratification, too. As technology advances, so too do we advance the amount of time we spend online. The internet can connect us to a million different people and perspectives that we never would have been exposed to before. But it can also expose us to some really nasty people and perspectives. And the only thing we can do about those people is shrug and say... Sorry, that's the internet. So, are we, as a society, better off with the internet? I think so. But just, I don't know, just remember to drink water and stretch. Alright, that's the lesson of this video. Go stretch. I'm serious, right now, go touch your toes.
I think we humans find things covered in hair more cute. We're more attracted to things covered in hair. And that's why I'm a furry.
Hey, James!
Hey! Furby, everyone's gonna put on $2,000 animal costumes and walk around. Do you want to come?
No.
But don't let me stop you from this hobby of yours. I may not understand why you like it, but as long as you're not harassing or hurting anyone, or anything, then do whatever makes you happy. Also shower regularly and eat your vegetables. So, in the last video, I made a haha joke about being a furry. I said given the choice between an animal with fur and one without fur, that most people would think the animal covered in fur would be cuter. And ha, if we applied that logic to people, then everyone would be a furry. I got a mixed bag of responses to that joke.
Okay, I was looking at all the comments about James saying he's a furry, and in my opinion, it shouldn't matter. If James is a furry and he told you, that means he trusts you and thinks that you would accept him the way he is. I don't care, I'm not watching him anymore.
Well, that's really nice of you, Mr. Branch.
but I still don't trust you. A lot of people were confused, so for the remainder of this video, every time I make a joke, it will be followed by this message. Two muffins are in an oven. One says, "Boy, it's hot in here." And the other says, "Yeah, you live in Arizona. What'd you expect?" But I'd say for the most part, you guys were very accepting. So that's good to know if I ever do want to come out as something. But if we wanted to talk about someone who is a furry, then look no further than 600 BC. You have to look pretty far. What am I talking about? I'm talking about this man named Aesop. 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 Aesubway. This man was the world's first furry. Okay, I'm calling him a furry because he wrote a lot of fables with talking animals in them, so I'm making fun of him for writing a lot of furry fanfiction.
I'm making fun of a dead person.
I made a video about a year and a half ago reading some of Aesop's fables, and that video is what this official Odd Ones Out shirt is referencing. Fables are short stories, usually with talking animals that have a moral at the end. Characters in fables don't have names. They're just simple, cookie-cutter characters. You don't have a fable with Michelangelo and Raphael from the Ninja Turtles. No, you have a fable with the tortoise and the other tortoise. So I'm going to read some more of Aesop's fables, but I'll be focusing on just one character. The fox. The fox gets around. You could pick any animal, and a fable exists with that animal being taken advantage of by a fox. The fox and the Triceratops. That fable probably exists. With the amount of fables the fox has been in, you'd expect him to be more moral than Gandhi. Aesop really liked foxes. His fursona was probably a fox.
The fox and the goat.
So once there was this fox eating some cheese, he wasn't looking where he was going, and he fell down a well. The fox had no way of getting out. Then a goat just so happened to be walking by and said, "Hey, what are you doing down there, you silly goose?" "Actually, I'm a fox," said the fox. "I was just drinking some of this lovely water. Is it good?" "Oh, it's only the best water in the entire universe." So the goat decided to jump down and join the fox. But then the fox used the goat. He used her as a stepping stool to get out of the well.
The website I'm reading this from has an interactive picture that shows the events that happened. Let's watch.
So then the goat says, "Whoa, buckaroo, aren't you gonna help me out?"
"No."
"Instead, I'm gonna teach you a moral. If you had as much sense as you have beard, you would have been more cautious about finding a way to get out again before you jumped in. Look before you leap, you stupid idiot." Okay, goodbye. "But fox, you fell into the well too. You were the one not looking. The goat looked, you just lied to her. And you got away with it. So the real moral of the story is, you can abuse the people in your life with no consequences, as long as they end up dead in a well." The fox and the crab. This fable is pretty short. Once there was a crab who was tired of living next to sand, so he decided to move to a meadow.
And then a fox ate him.
That's the real fable! It counted as one of Aesop's 665. And the moral is, be content with your lot. Don't move, don't travel, don't try and live in a better location because a fox might eat you! Just live in your studio apartment and deal with it! The lion, the bear, and the fox. This baby goat, he's a kid, went up to a lion and a bear and said, "Have you seen my mom? I haven't seen her in a couple of weeks. She said she was going to get some water and a pack of smokes, and she hasn't come home." But the bear and the lion didn't care. They started fighting each other over who would get to eat the baby goat. And then a fox jumped out of the bushes, killed the kid, and ran off with it. I wonder how much Aesop got paid for these. Again, the website has a very nifty interactive picture that shows you exactly what occurred. And the moral of the story? Those who have all the toil do not always get the profit. I'm not exactly sure what that means. Seems to me the moral should be, don't talk to lions and bears, and watch out for foxes. The fox and the grapes. Basically what happens in this fable was that once there were some grapes growing on a really tall tree. Do grapes grow on really tall trees? Maybe they did in 600 BC. And the fox really wanted some of the grapes. Do foxes like grapes? Maybe they did in 600 BC.
And so he tried to get them himself, but he couldn't reach them. And since the fox didn't want to ask for help,
probably because all the other animals hated him,
he said,
"Eh, I didn't want your sour grapes anyway."
There are many who pretend to despise and belittle that which is beyond their reach. Which is where I think the phrase, money is the root of all evil, came from. People were upset that they couldn't get money, so they just said, "Eh, I didn't want your evil money anyway." Okay, here's the last fable.
This one's kinda sad. The fox and the scorpion. So the fox, this whole time, had been gathering ingredients to make the perfect sandwich. He got the meat from an orphaned goat, a sautéed depressed crab, and some cheese. He was also going to get a side of grapes, but he decided to go without them. When all of a sudden, a scorpion comes up to him and said, "Hey, can I get a ride across the river? I'm too small to swim across." "Ha! Nice try, Slick. If I gave you a ride, you'd just sting me." No, if I did that, we'd both drown. It would be a lose-lose." "All right, I'll help you out. I've been acting like a huge jerk lately, all to make this one sandwich. But I'm going to change starting now. For once, I'm going to be helpful." So the fox gives the scorpion a ride, when all of a sudden... "Ah, why'd you sting me?"
"Because I'm a scorpion. It's in my nature."
"Yeah, but you're a talking scorpion. I thought you'd have enough cognitive sense to know not to do that.
You even said yourself that if you stung me, we'd both die."
"Actually, I can hold my breath for 6 days.
"What?"
"Yeah, watch."
"My sandwich."
And then the fox died. He had no family, no friends, and no sandwich. And that's why you never help scorpions.
"I just lied to you guys! I pranked you! This fable wasn't the fox and the scorpion, it's actually the frog and the scorpion. The fox never got stung. He knows better than to help out another creature. Fox is too busy looking out for number one, baby!"
The frog's dead, though. And if it makes you happy, the scorpion died, too. And the fox got to enjoy his sandwich. Still alone, but...
The end! Man, what a plot twist! Aren't I so good at telling stories?
So what did we learn, children? We learned, don't ask for help, don't help out others, lie to people, take what you want, and you'll succeed.
Juan Ponce de Leon was famously known for searching for the legendary Fountain of Youth with his crew in the 1500s. Spoiler alert, he didn't find it, obviously, because he's dead, I think. But his search might have been successful if only he lived in the 21st century. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here to tell you that we have the key to immortality right in our grocery stores. And it all starts with this tiny red bottle of 5-hour energy. So drinking one of these gives you 5 hours of energy. So that means drinking two will give you 10 hours, right? It takes 17,520,000 hours to make up 2,000 years. And here's how we unlock our immortality. To get 17 million hours of energy, we would have to drink 3,504,000 bottles of 5-hour energy. After you do all that, you have enough energy to last the next 2,000 years. And there you go, that's how you live forever. Every 2,000 years, you just drink 3 million bottles of 5-hour energy. And what, that's 12 ounces a bottle divided by 128. So that's only 328,500 gallons of 5-hour energy, and boom. So it's not really a fountain of youth, it's more of a pond of youth. And you have to drink all that 5-hour energy every 2,000 years. It's not going to be forever. And it might take a while, so just set aside like an afternoon and just get sipping. Wait, hold on. If each bottle is $2.50, then how much would it cost? $8.7 million? Dang it! Only the rich get to live forever! Okay, guys, never mind. I guess immortality is impossible. Ugh, just looks like all of us are going to have to die.
First!
Who else is watching this in current year?
I'm first. No, I'm first!
Everyone needs to know I was the first person to leave a comment on this YouTube video. Please! I don't have a lot going on right now.
Fellas, I'm just gonna go ahead and say what we're all thinking here. This video is a forgery. And also a homosexual.
Hey! Why are we spending our finite time spreading negativity and arguing with strangers whose minds will never change? Are we really that bitter we have to bring others down? These comments are pointless because everyone knows I'm first. Comment sections, in some form or another, have been around since the internet's conception, and I don't see them ever going away. So in like 200 years, historians are going to be studying ancient comments to see what life was like back then. Right underneath this video, and any other video ever posted, is an open forum for anyone who watched the video to leave their semi-unfiltered, anonymous opinions. And nothing bad has ever come from it.
Wait, are you scrolling down to read the comments while the video is playing? You haven't even finished the video and you're reading the comments? I'm sorry, did I bore you? Are you bored?
No, that's fine. Don't mind me. It's not like we were in the middle of a one-sided conversation or anything. Also, if you see any spam bots, can you report them for me? They're a real problem. Like most people, I will watch a video and then not add anything to the conversation and go about my day watching more videos. And I know the vast majority of you do this too, because let's math something out. If we look at my last video and take the total amount of comments and divide it by views, we only get 0.4% of people who watch the video leave a comment. That's not a whole lot. Oh, I know. What if we look at a YouTuber apology video? I'm sure there's a bunch of people leaving comments, you know, letting people know their thoughts and having a civil discussion. Huh. Only 0.3% of people who watched the video left a comment. Every video I did the math on only ever had a 0.5% view-to-comment ratio. So if only 0.5% of people are leaving comments, why am I talking about them? Because while most of us aren't comment leavers, I know the majority of us are comment readers. This video and the comment section are digital neighbors. You literally don't have to travel far to read comments. They're right there. Sorry if you're watching this on a TV, by the way. They are there, trust me. And I can prove most people are comment readers because a lot of times a single comment will get more thumbs up than there are total comments on a video. Which, of course they do, because who's going to take the time to write out a whole comment when they could just thumbs up the ones they agree with? The relationship between YouTuber and comment section is a little complicated. For one, it's the only time I get to kind of have a conversation with 0.4% of you. If you feel so inclined, you can type out a response to this video, give me feedback, tell a joke, or post a timestamp of a part you liked. And there's a 99% chance I'll never see that. But if I do, and I like what you said enough, I can give your comment a little heart badge. Yeah, I perceive this guy. Although there are some challenges with comment sections that are not exclusively YouTuber problems. Even in the early days of the internet, comment sections have had a reputation of being toxic and argumentative. I will say I have noticed that comment sections are not as toxic as they were in the 2010s. Maybe websites have just gotten better at moderating, but I've noticed an overall decrease in the amount of slurs and KYSs compared to when I was 13, so good job, comment section. You're growing up. I think there are three reasons why comment sections can be very toxic. Number one, people are more likely to speak out when they disagree with something rather than agree with it. If you come across the comment, "I like cats," you're not going to go out of your way to comment, "I agree with your opinion, cats are lovely." You might give the comment a thumbs up, but otherwise you're just going to keep scrolling. But if you're someone who only likes dogs and you have too much free time, now you're getting all worked up seeing a different opinion than yours, so you're going to comment, "This is really insensitive to dogs, you know, my dog could beat up your cat." So every comment section will eventually devolve into a cesspool full of people who disagree with each other. But the toxicity is only magnified because of reason number two, people are anonymous. When you don't have to face real-world repercussions for all the reprehensible shit you say, there's no limit to the things you won't spout out. Although there is something to be said about